metaphorical lawn of Buckingham Palace, waiting to comment on and find out precisely what sanctions he would face for the latest revelations and developments. Although, actually, to my point about things suddenly speeding up, some of these revelations weren't actually new, as my learned colleague Emily Maitlis would tell you. But have things gone far enough? And think about this question. Why do you care?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a major technical outage is affecting dozens of websites, online games and mobile apps. The problems appear to be related to an issue at Amazon Web Services, which sits behind many popular platforms. LBC's Henry Riley has the details.
Hundreds of websites have been taken offline or are affected in some way, from Roblox, HMRC and Snapchat to Duolingo, Vodafone and Fortnite. There are also a number of banks said to be affected. Now, the issue is linked to Amazon Web Services, which acts as a cloud service for various companies. It accounts for the majority of Amazon's profits. On their service page, they say there have been increased error rates and delays with multiple services.
LBC has learned thousands of Metropolitan Police staff are set to strike on Bonfire Night. Some 6,500 members of the PCS union, including call handlers and custody staff, are planning to walk out in a row over pay. The Met has been contacted for comment. Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, is expected in Israel as part of efforts to shore up the Gaza ceasefire. The Israeli military says it's begun renewed enforcement of the truce hours after carrying out a series of deadly airstrikes. They followed the deaths of two IDF troops in Rafah. Shosh Bedrosian is a spokesperson for the Israeli government.
Terrorists fired an anti-tank missile and gunfire towards our troops operating in the area of Rafah to dismantle terrorist infrastructure, all in accordance with the ceasefire agreement. Now, in response, the IDF began striking in the area to eliminate the threat.
The Israeli military says its troops opened fire on people who crossed the yellow line of withdrawal earlier today. Education leaders have welcomed the introduction of a new V level for post-16 students in England. The National Education Union says the changes will address a lack of coherence and clarity in the current system of vocational courses. They will replace level 3 BTECs and some other technical courses. Israeli police say public disorder and violent riots forced the cancellation of the Tel Aviv football derby. Supporters of Maccabi and Hapoel were involved in clashes last night. Ministers here are working to overturn a ban on Maccabi supporters attending a tie at Aston Villa next month. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 47 at 94.02. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and heavy showers across England and Wales. Drier in Northern Ireland and Southern Scotland, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. I am conscious of something rather problematic. And it is, and this is absolutely not a criticism of you, not in a million years. I'm never going to criticise you first thing on a Monday morning. Give me until at least 11 o'clock. But it occurs to me that you pay a little bit less attention, well, you possibly pay a little bit less attention to this programme than I do. Some people pay more attention to this programme than I do, which is slightly worrying, but also strangely flattering. When I say you might pay less attention to this programme than I do, it may mean that some of my Toto the dog moments, when I like to pull back the curtain and show you the increasingly bewildered old man pulling buttons and pushing levers, you may not have the first idea what I'm talking about. But I'm going to press on regardless. So there was a story last week, and it inspired a slightly surreal hour of radio, if you missed it. Might be worth listening back to, actually. There was a story last week which I think has forged a lens through which I am going to look at almost everything for the foreseeable future, for the next few months. You know that I sometimes sit here and say to you, I do not understand what all the fuss is about, don't you? Or I sometimes sit here and say to you, listen, don't pay any attention to what I'm saying, because when I was a newspaper journalist, my ability to miss a story, even when it was sitting on my own lap, was legendary. Countless were the times I opened a rival newspaper to see a story that I knew about on page three, which is where the big showbiz story used to go. And I'd turn to my colleague and I'd say, oh, I knew about that. And he would look at me with a sort of slightly winning combination of bewilderment and fatigue. I said, I knew about that. I was at that party. I saw that. Oh, okay. Yeah. Missed it again, did you? Yes, I did. I was his boss, poor bloke. Goodness knows how he coped with that indignity. But on Thursday or Friday, I can't even remember what day it was, but any one day last week, the suspicion I had that the so-called China spy case was a great big bunch of nothing in many, many ways, at least to you and to a certain extent to me, was confirmed in the most glorious fashion when we discovered that just 3% of the population described themselves as following the story closely. So I think one of the laziest things you can do on the radio is ask people why they care about something, except on the days when it's not a lazy thing to do. I probably should have asked you about that. If I'd asked you about that, why do you care, you'd have struggled to tell me, because what we witnessed was the most perfect marriage of increasingly unhinged right-wing politicians and their increasingly corrupt client journalists in my profession, in the media side of things, shifting in 24 hours from attacking Keir Starmer for intervening in a legal case against two alleged spies to attacking Keir Starmer for not intervening in a legal case against two alleged spies. That is a simple distillation of the entire story. Don't panic, we're not talking about it today. But that illustration of the madness, just how bad things have become, proof positive that I'm not exaggerating when I warn you about this stuff. So I mention that solely because, well, I like to take you by surprise on a Monday morning, and because I am going to struggle not to look at every story now with a little side order of, does anybody actually care about this? Because you can't always rely on the people deciding what's newsworthy to decide what's newsworthy. I'm also conscious of the difference between public interest and public interest. You know, that was a public interest story. Of course it was. I'm not stupid. But the interest that the public had in it was almost negligible. I've struggled historically with royal phone-ins. The last few have been pretty good. The last few, somehow, we found the right way into them. But generally speaking, they're a little bit sixth-form debating society. Should we abolish the monarchy? When you get into the detail of things, should we slim things down or should we... No one really has much of substance to say. There's a little bit of fun to be had with the kind of people that might line the mail for the occasion of the king sneezing or something like that. That level of cultish devotion to the royal family can be diverting, it can be amusing. But we forget, don't we, the significance sometimes of, and perhaps the absurdity of, the entire institution. And it is now pretty much the case that unless it's high days and holidays, unless someone has sadly passed away or got married or had a baby, the only time we really focus upon the British royal family is either when the Mango Mussolini is visiting to have his toes tickled by a visibly and suitably embarrassed Prince Charles, or when they are mired in scandal, when they are in danger of disappearing under a tidal wave of scandal. And that's happened quite a few times in the past, never more so than with Prince Andrew. A quick aside before we get stuck into today's business. I find it deeply, deeply obnoxious that the Duke of Sussex, Prince Harry, gets lumped in with his idiot uncle as somehow being problematic. A military hero who has done more to point out the corruption of the British media than almost anybody else in public life, being lumped in with a bloke who has been a disgrace to the family for decades is truly, truly absurd. Actually, mentioning the Duke of Sussex, Harry and Meghan constitute massive, massive news stories as well, because they offered such a wonderful opportunity to many members of the media to paint them as, or to essentially drive pages and pages, hours and hours of journalism, motivated almost entirely by the fact that the one of the most senior members of the royal family had the audacity to fall in love with a woman of colour, something that drives a coach and horses, if you pardon the pun, through much of our establishment presumptions. I've probably already said Prince Charles, have I? Yes, right, there you go. King Charles. 10 minutes after 10 is the time. So, the question that is obvious today is, has this gone far enough? The King threatened to shame Andrew by stripping him of his real titles. The Daily Mail posit that today as an exclusive. I'd say it was pretty obvious that that's what had happened. He was given the opportunity to jump before he was pushed. So Charles telling his brother that he would take decisive further action if he refused to give up the dukedom and other honours after being found to have lied repeatedly about cutting ties with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. And some of the coverage, some of the responses, including from the family of the young woman who claimed before she took her own life that she was paid significant sums of money to have sex with the men three times, including her family. There are claims that or beliefs that he should have been further punished, that he should have lost his princedom. 11 minutes after 10 is the time. And what I think the obvious question is today is whether or not this has gone far enough, whether or not he should remain a prince, whether it is actually worth taking up parliamentary time to pass legislation that would involve him no longer being a prince. But the lens through which I want you to look at that question is this. Okay, why do you care? I'm not saying you shouldn't, quite the opposite. I care. I care a lot more than I expected to care. I care more about this than I have about any other royal story in 20 years, except the absolutely ludicrous targeting of Prince Harry and his wife, Meghan, for the sins of being the sins of rejecting the ludicrous deals that his family has historically done with Fleet Street and being offered up as sacrificial lambs so they'd leave the rest of them alone. But I care about this, and I can't quite work out why. I think part of the reason I care is because of a slightly embarrassing belief in what you might call the contract. What you might call and this is embarrassing because it makes me sound hideously naive. In that in order to retain the pomp and privilege, the wealth and circumstance that the royal family maintains, hinges on, we are entitled to expect certain standards to be met in return. I don't often feel sorry for members of the royal family, but I felt very, very sorry for King Charles when Donald Trump was being given rides in a golden carriage around his garden for no reason other than to make him feel special. But I didn't feel desperately sorry for him because, of course, when they close the door at the end of the visit, they go back to being waited on hands and foot and even reportedly having a member of staff to squeeze the toothpaste onto his toothbrush every morning and every evening. So it's not exactly a life that lends itself to violins and sympathy. But there's a quid pro quo, isn't there, involved? And in return for leading these ludicrous lives of luxury and privilege, we expect from you duty. Now, I'm 53. I'm not sure I've ever used the word duty about the royal family with a straight face at any other point in my life. But I'm trying to do something that I'm about to ask you to do. I'm trying to work out why I care about this. The the fate of Virginia Giuffre is particularly hideous. The poor woman who never achieved, it would seem, peace or happiness, culminating originally in a £12 million settlement funded by the late Queen and ultimately in her own suicide. And you find yourself thinking that woman was clearly exploited, although Prince Andrew denies any involvement at all. She was clearly and categorically exploited by Jeffrey Epstein and much of his clientele. So that is part of it. I have daughters. A couple of you pointed that out. David's mentioned that in a text. I don't know if that is going to be relevant to this response that I have. I don't think that it is, but it might be. Why do I care? Why do you care so much? 0345 6060 973. Just a word to the wise. If you're going to deny something publicly, I'd caution you against denying it vigorously. I always think that's a strange word to use in the context of denials. But as I mentioned 3 minutes ago, he repeatedly denies any involvement whatsoever in any of these matters. But as I've repeatedly said to you, I can't think of many other circumstances in which you'd give 12 million quid to somebody accusing you of something that you hadn't done. I think that quite vigorously. So, should he be stripped of all of the titles? Why would that matter? And I think that you answer both of those questions, in a way, when you tell me why you care. So, yes, strip him of everything. Literally, publicly humiliate him, bring back the stocks. But why do we care? I don't know Prince Andrew. I don't know a great deal about him. I've got a couple of old muckers who've been in close protection, and they don't have very many nice things to say about him. And that's quite rare, because they largely have warm words for all the other members of the royal family. But he has a reputation, I suspect richly deserved, for being incredibly entitled and incredibly arrogant. And of course, the more entitled and arrogant you are, the more important it is that you're not a complete flump. And he is apparently a complete flump. There will be more reports. Today we learn that he may have asked one of his close protection officers to sort of try to dig up dirt on the young woman accusing him of having had sex with her. So it's not going away. There'll be more evidence. I think probably the Virginia Giuffre revelations are more or less over, because the BBC have got hold of her memoir and other journalists have picked over it. But it won't be pretty reading for them. It could well be the Epstein end in the United States of America, that Donald Trump remains absolutely desperate to distract his own voters and supporters from. But it may well be, as Ghislaine Maxwell's attempts to get herself pardoned or released from jail involve the drip feed of damaging information to a friendly journalist who then magics it or conjures it onto the front page of the Mail on Sunday or the Sunday Times. It may well be that there is more to come. We know that he has lied. He lied to Emily Maitlis. Another little bit of advice for you. If you're going to lie to someone in life, don't lie to Emily Maitlis. Of all people, it will come back to haunt you. And indeed it has. But why does it matter? Why does it matter? 17 minutes after 10 is the time. And don't hold back because you think your answer might be obvious. I kind of want to address people listening to this from maybe another country or another planet who can't quite get their head around even the existence of a royal family. And don't quite understand how people who are normally quite outspoken in their critiques of unearned privilege and entitlement retain, as I do, I make no apology for that, something of a soft spot for elements of this lot, of this crowd. I don't know that they would understand why this story matters so much. The easy response would be, well, we shouldn't have a royal family at all. The whole thing's ridiculous. Who cares what this man gets up to? He's not, he hasn't broken any crimes. He's not been proved to have done anything wrong. He's paid 12 million quid to someone who accused him of something, but hey ho, that's his business. Why does it matter to you? Not to others. This isn't one of those phonies where you speculate on why other people care. Why does it matter to you personally? And you may not have stopped to think about that. I hadn't until this morning. I'm surprised how much I care. It offends my sensibilities in ways that I haven't yet managed to articulate. 0345 6060 973. Why does this story meet both demands? for the public interest and the interest of the public? And why do you care about it so much? And of course, underpinning that question is the question of what you want to happen next. Because I increasingly can't see how he can be allowed, permitted to retain any trapping of privilege whatsoever. So, you know, it's voluntary, him dropping the Duke business, because his brother said, if you don't, I'll rip it away from you. I'll tear it out of your hands. That's a nuance I don't particularly care about, but he should not be a prince. He should not be allowed to call himself a prince. Not now, not tomorrow, and not for the rest of his miserable life. That, to me, is an absolute given. But if you ask me why I care so much, given that I think princeships and kingships and monarchies are essentially ridiculous, I'm not sure I could tell you. So why do you care? 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance, or you'd rather make your escape. That you want to cut a dash, or just cut your emissions. That you like to take the bends, or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwoods Audi Crawley and Five Oaks and Harwoods Volvo Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwoods, family owned since 1931.
Hi, we're Travel Essence, experts in tailor-made holidays to Australia and New Zealand. Magical lands of fiery red deserts and oceans vivid blue, where you can cruise serene billabongs and listen to Indigenous storytellers under the shade of an ancient boab tree. Holidays that aren't about how far you roam, but how deep you're willing to go. Travelessence.co.uk.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
21 minutes after 10 is the time. In happier news, I have got an absolute doozy of an application for Idiot's Corner already this morning that I cannot wait to share with you. It's one of the maddest I think I've ever seen. Seriously, I'm not over-egging the pudding. I'll prove it to you shortly. But first, Alison in Bury St. Edmunds is here to talk about Andrew, who shouldn't be a prince, but why does it matter? Why does it matter to you?
Morning, James. Lovely to talk to you again. Right, a little bit of background to why I think the way I do. I was born in the 60s, 70s, 80s, grew up.
Born in the
1966,
60s.
To be exact.
Oh, fantastic.
Very good year. You know, grew up with the royal, you know, the Jubilee, Princess Diane and Charles' wedding, very good, that sort of thing. So I'm, you know, joined the Air Force. I'm very much a monarchist. Believe in the monarchy, because as I look around the world, look at Russia, China, America, who don't, I believe we fare better for having it. That being said, they are only
humans. You picked a few countries there that might possibly lead to accusations of bias. You're going to try and justify the non-existence of a monarchy. Going for Russia and China is, you know, and you could have gone for France, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could have done.
Yeah, at the moment, we're doing better than them as well. You could have gone for Greece, who are at the moment doing better than us. They got rid of their royal family. There's quite a lot of countries that don't have royal families, who don't necessarily stand comparison with Russia and China as paragons of... but anyway, carry on. Nice play.
Look at Italy and the Netherlands, I rest my case. So, basically, with Prince Andrew, I compare him to, say, Princess Margaret. Now... Yeah. In the royal family, they're kind of, no, you can't marry this person, you can't marry them, you have to do what we do. It's all about the image of the monarchy. And I think they're only human. I mean, he fell in love with Kustark and wasn't allowed to marry her. And I think that type of containment does something to their mental state, and they go off the rails and they do things that ordinarily we wouldn't do and we condemn. And you only have to compare them to Harry and Meghan. now, which you have done. Now, I'm a big Harry and Meghan fan, and what has happened to them, I find deplorable. Now, they're not perfect, but look what they're doing. And they're doing it with their own money, and it's working. So you've also got to put that in the mix. So I care because I care about the monarchy and I want us to have the monarchy, you know.
I'm more confused now than I was before you started talking. Are you sticking up for Andrew?
No, not at all. Oh. Not at all. I mean, look at what's happened to, you
also,
know.
Also, Italy, I don't know. I think things are already quite confused before you brought Italy and the Netherlands in. So the Netherlands has a monarchy and Italy doesn't.
Yes.
So how do you rest your case on that?
Well, I got confused with Italy.
That's all right. I'm just checking. I'm just making sure I'm not going mad.
I apologise. Okay. No.
What should happen to Prince Andrew? What should happen to Prince Andrew?
I think he should... and what should happen to him is what would happen to anybody in those circumstances. You know, he should be treated just like anybody else would be. I think they are protected. I think he shouldn't be protected. I think, I'm not going to call him a liar, but he has told some untruths.
Yes, okay. Well, that would be a liar under most circumstances. But you know, you don't lose your job for lying, or very few people lose their job for lying. It depends on the lie. But no, it's 17 she was at the time of the first allegation. And although it is denied, I'm required to repeat that and happy to do so. The fact that he handed over 12 million quid of his late mum's money just sort of confuses the issue, doesn't it? Thank you, Alison. Karen is in Kingston. Karen, why do you care?
I think you said, why do we care? And my view is that it's such a flagrant, what he did was such a flagrant abuse of power and wealth. And that we, as a society,
even if he didn't do that, the fact that he, for me, in the world of what is known, I don't want to turn into Donald Rumsfeld, but in the known knowns, the fact that he retained contact with Epstein after he had been convicted and wrote to him saying, I can't wait to play again. I can't wait until we can play again. That makes him absolutely gross. And that's known.
Actually.
Yes, it's just horrible, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's not okay to treat people as expendable objects for your own personal satisfaction. But with Andrew, he has had every advantage in life, not only with his privilege and wealth, but you look at his family and whatever you think of the monarchy, you look at the other royals, Princess Anne, King Charles, William and Kate, whatever they think, their day-to-day life is actually used to go out there and try and make life better for people and promote a better society. And despite all of that advantage and family in front of him, he has chosen to behave like that with absolutely no remorse or even acknowledgement.
So the more you care about the royal family, the more you care about this story because he's doing so much damage to the brand, as it were, or to the firm.
Personally, I think we shouldn't have a monarchist in the next generation.
Okay. Well, then I'm even more confused as to why, because I could probably go along with that. It wouldn't keep me awake at night. So this matters because of what it tells us about powerful men and the way they can ride roughshod over the kind 100%. Of standards that the rest of us abide by. If a friend of mine was convicted of trafficking young women or paedophilia, the idea that you'd drop him a note saying, can't wait to play again soon, would be just... I mean, I can't even entertain the notion.
It's his background as a royal, to me, as a former prosecutor, is a massive, massive factor to make it 10 times worse. What he did is horrendous. The fact his background makes 100% worse.
Yeah, I kind of get it. I don't think we've married the two together yet, though. There's no criticism of you. I haven't done it either. That just this idea... That, I mean, does it just matter because... He is a very big figure. I mean, this slightly strange system that we've constructed together, it has a pinnacle. There is a family at the top of our collective tree in this country. Whether you're comfortable with that absurdity or not is immaterial. We have a society, we've had it for thousands of years, certainly in the current form, we've had it since 1066, where one family sits atop the pyramid of our shared lives and... trumps everybody else on a social scale or on a not so much a financial scale anymore, but they're not badly off. And therefore, by dint of being a member of that family, you draw enormous amounts of attention to yourself. And usually, I would say, do benefit from a slightly two-tier approach. And this guy has gone far enough to rip up that rule book. Maybe that's why it matters. I don't know. Peter's in Crosby. Peter, what do you think?
Good morning to you, James.
Hello, Peter.
First of all, the quote about bankruptcy comes from Hemingway.
Hemingway, of course it does. It's one of those mental blockages I've got. I thought it was Scott Fitzgerald. I knew it wasn't him, so I didn't say Scott Fitzgerald, and I forgot that it was Hemingway. But anyway, there we go. Bankrupt. First slowly, then quickly.
That's it. Right. Now, the context in which I speak, I spent 50 years of my working life as a social worker and as a probation officer. So I've dealt with both the abused and the abusers of children.
Yes.
So I would say that this is not about the monarchy. This is about the abuse of power by powerful people, usually men. This is why it matters so much to me. So it doesn't matter to me whether it's so-called Prince Andrew or so-called Sir James Savile. Mm. It should be investigated to the nth degree, with all the implications that it has showed us, like the use of the close protection officer. Can you find some dirt on poor Virginia Gouffray?
Mm-hmm.
The £12 million, which you've mentioned earlier. Where did the Queen get that money? Where did he get that money from? Does that indirectly come from the taxpayer?
I don't know that. I mean, I'd be amazed if it did. I think.
Yeah. Okay.
But certainly the latest allegations, and so it is just the magnifying glass of his status, isn't it? Because everything you've said you'd be equally exercised by it if it was somebody that we'd never heard of,
at the end of my street.
Yes, yeah. and it is the magnifying glass of who he is that essentially works on the story and turns it into something so enormous. Well, I mean, because I thought, and I've got this completely wrong, that the more you cared about the royal family, the more you'd care about this. Either you'd sort of want to cover it up or you'd want... But I sense that's not the case, is it? It's the more you care about exploitation and victims, the more you care about this story.
Absolutely, James.
You're a good man. You're a good man. You needed to remind us of that because of the status and the magnifying glass kicking in. And listen, I'm not going to say it a million times. Andrew denies the allegations that were put to him by Virginia Giuffre, but the simple point is that Epstein had done jail time for soliciting by the time Andrew retained his friendship with him, and after he did that, he wrote the thing saying, "We are in this together," and he can't wait to play some more soon. And that to me is just stomach churning. I've already said I felt sorry for King Charles when Donald Trump came to visit. My reading of the situation, and there's no particular reason for this, is that the younger Prince William is even more exercised by Andrew's actions than his dad is. I felt really sorry for him at the funeral of the Duchess of Kent when Andrew sort of sidled up to him and started whispering in his ear as if they were about to have a little chuckle together. And that's it. That's really good. Three good calls there. I love that idea that it's nothing to do with our repulsion has nothing to do with his membership of the royal family or his status. We should be equally repulsed by all tales of exploitation or indeed facilitation of exploitation or remaining friends with people who've done disgusting things. And the magnifying glass that goes with his job is the reason why the story is so huge. So we need to see a similarly magnified act of atonement. And if he's not going to do penance in a Profumo style, then it is the job of the state, I would argue, to come in and punish him on our behalf, which would involve taking away everything, all his titles. You may be aware of a big internet outage. I saw a little clip this morning on my social media. It just said loads of very important apps have gone down. So I checked the app I use and it was fine and I went back to bed. But it is quite a big deal. And if you're worried about it, then don't worry. Will Guyett will be here just before 11 o'clock to talk you through what is going on and what it all might mean. But for now, Thomas Watts has your headlines.
A number of major websites and apps are down because of that technical issue. Amazon Web Services, which sits behind many platforms, says it's working to to fix the problem. The US and Arab nations are working to shore up the Gaza ceasefire after both sides accused each other of breaching the truce. The Israeli military says it's begun renewed enforcement of the deal with Hamas. Thousands of Metropolitan Police staff are set to strike on bonfire night. Some 6,500 members of the PCS union, including call handlers and custody staff, are planning to walk out in a row over pay. LBC weather, sunny spells and heavy showers across England and Wales. Drier for Northern Ireland and Southern Scotland. A high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance, or you'd rather make your escape. That you want to cut a dash, or just cut your emissions. That you like to take the bends, or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwoods Audi Crawley and Five Oaks and Harwoods Volvo Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwoods, family-owned since 1931.
Since quit smoking, my breathing was a lot better, like my chest felt open. I could smell flowers.
One U Surrey can help you stop smoking with free quitting aids, online tips and one-to-one support with a qualified advisor.
When I quit smoking, I felt like a whole new lease of life, a whole new reason to be alive. It lifted my mood hugely.
With support, you can do it. For more information, visit oneusurrey.org.uk. Stopping smoking. It's well worth it.
The support I received from One New Surrey has been absolutely amazing. Like, it's been very important to my journey, and I wouldn't have been able to stop smoking without them.
Are you an absolutely huge fonter or a zoom-inner? Perhaps you're an arm stretched out like a zombie when holding a newspaper-er, or a squint so tightly at the menu the waiter thinks you're sleeping-er. At Specsavers, we get it. You don't want to admit it's time to become a glasses-wearer-er. That's okay. We're ready to see you whenever you're ready to see properly. Book an eye test at specsavers.co.uk so you can see clearer. Okay, we'll stop with the ears now.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 10:36. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, 10:36. That sounded like Donald Trump then. I just got a little bit distracted by a headline saying Trump pressures Zelensky after Putin call. You'll also be aware that the ceasefire in the Middle East was breached this weekend. I'll bring you the full death toll before close of play today, but there it is. A Donald Trump-style ceasefire, which can sort of cease and then become a ceasefire again. 10:36. Adam is in Sutton to steer us back to the Andrew story and the vexed question of why it matters, although I think that we're edging ever closer to understanding that, aren't we? Adam, what would you like to say?
Hey, James, I want to say that I'm a major fan of yours, mate, so thank
Quite
you so
right.
much.
Let's get the important stuff out of the way first, Adam. There yes. we go. Absolutely so, crucial contribution. Carry on. Thank
so,
you.
So I think it's very interesting what's going on now, because we as a nation, England, I think we're losing our relevance in the world, and I think the UK itself relies very heavily.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I think you'll find that you can establish your relevance in the world by hanging flags from every lamppost in Sutton.
Absolutely.
Why haven't you done your bit, Adam? It's all very well moaning about us losing relevance. How many flags have you hung up this week?
I tried, mate. I tried, but right. I just kept slipping down.
Fair enough. Get a ladder.
So, get a ladder.
So the royal family actually are one of our few kind of world-beating institutions.
I think so, I got a lot of American friends, and they love the royal family, and I think the royal family have massive influence when it comes to things like trade and relationships. And I think that an aspect of the royal family is its integrity, its honesty, its representation of British values, and the haughtiness and everything. And people see that as a very honourable and a very big thing to be proud of. And the problem is when you have these type of stories, it kind of knocks that. And we kind of, my personal view, right, I think we shafted ourselves by Brexit, and that removes.
That's
some
not
of
a
our
personal view, mate. That's a matter of historical fact.
Yep, and I think that basically removed our relevance quite significantly. And then on top of it, now we're having issues with regards to our royal family, and we're and also we're having turmoil within the public. You know, individuals causing issues on the streets on baseless things. So I think England itself is in a very very kind of difficult situation and position right now. And I honestly think that if the royal family go, then what exactly has Britain got to offer the world? You know, flags,
and football.
Yeah, and football. Well, we're getting bought out.
I'm joking. I like this. I think I really like this. Actually, I didn't. I mean, normally it's me that can shoehorn Brexit into a conversation about something that's got absolutely nothing to do with Brexit. But you didn't do that. You made it relevant, and you talk about and it really came home, didn't it, Adam, during the state visit by Donald Trump, when you realise that whatever we might think about an institution and its inherent absurdities, the rest of the world looks at things differently, or much of the world may look at things very differently. And it meant so much. It's probably part of the reason why Trump hasn't come after us with quite as much viciousness or alacrity as he's come after lots and lots of other countries and lots of other world leaders, in that it puts us in a position that very few other countries, if any other countries, can ever actually get into.
Yeah.
And Andrew is knocking it from the inside. He's scratching away from the inside and doing it great damage.
I think so, mate. And also, I think that England and America have had a very, they always have had a very great relationship. But
Always. There was a war.
There was, but after that, it kind of like simmered down and it was all right. But you know, it worries me. You know, it's funny because I'm Muslim myself. I was born here, and I feel the tensions in this country. And I love my country. I love where I live, and you know, it's very. You go to America and everyone's like, oh, look at it. Listen to his accent. He's a, you know,
and he's a Brit. And the royal family are part of that. Yeah, I do know. I like this. I mean, it's almost like you're describing a brand. I mean, and I know that you're not offering this up as an alternative to the idea that the story matters because of the victims and what we learn about exploitation. But in terms of why it matters on a different page, on a different level, that this idea of the royal family being something that needs to be looked after, cherished, protected, and if you've got someone inside sabotaging it, then it kind of matters to everybody to whom the royal family matters. You've managed to articulate what I was trying to say 10 minutes ago in ways that I completely failed to do. Thank you. And you're right about the sort of feeling in the air at the moment. I don't know if you saw an interview given by a Conservative MP. It's like there's a never-ending conveyor belt of these ghouls talking about essentially deporting people who've got every right to be here. Last time I checked, that was an idea slightly to the right of Enoch Powell. Someone called Katie Lamb, L-A-M? Someone called Katie Lamb in an interview in the Times this weekend, doing that kind of, ho-ho-ho, yes, we should deport people who've got every right to be here. And that's one of the reasons why everything feels so febrile at the minute, is that Enoch Powell would now not get thrown out of the Conservative Party for the comments that he made, because Robert Jenrick and now Katie Lamb have gone further than Enoch Powell ever did without any sanction whatsoever from their party. Thank you, Adam. Kieran is in Hereford. Kieran, what would you like to say?
I think we should care in a nutshell, because it's the very least we can do. I did my PhD thesis on this, and there's an idea called social proof that says that what happens to survivors and conversely, what happens to people they call out affects whether other survivors feel comfortable coming forward. So I think that, you know, I care about this across the board, whether it's someone like Andrew or whether it's, you know, other more ambiguous cases. But yeah, I think that, sorry, I'm really nervous.
Hey, it's only me. You've done a PhD. You're the one here that's qualified. I don't know why they pay me for my opinions. I like the idea of social proof. Is that it's? I mean, it's precedent, isn't it? It creates an atmosphere in which people will feel more empowered to come forward. And to be clear, again, Andrew denies the specific allegations against him, but he can't deny staying mates with a man who pleaded guilty to charges of solicitation of prostitution and of solicitation of prostitution with a minor.
Yeah,
and served time in jail, and got a lovely note off Andrew shortly afterwards saying, "I can't wait to play with you again."
Yeah.
It's gross.
Yeah, it's really gross.
And that's why it matters, because the bigger the characters involved, the bigger the opportunity to provide social proof.
Yeah, and social capital. You know, I think what happened to Virginia is heartbreaking, but is sadly what happens to a lot of survivors of different kinds of abuse, you know, and I would hate that that puts other survivors off from coming forward.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's two things, and I know they're not being offered up in competition to each other, because they're both interesting. Yours, and the earlier caller who made a similar point, are obviously more powerful and more important points. But in terms of why there is interest in coverage of a certain note and a certain level, there are other answers as well, less important and less powerful, and to do with our relationship with the monarchy, so the monarchy's relationship with us, what it says to the world and what the world says to us. But in terms of why it matters, and the problem, I suppose, with this analysis, Kieran, is that it should have mattered ages ago. It should have mattered in 2011, when that well-known photograph was published. It was the day afterwards that Andrew wrote to Epstein promising to keep in close touch and expressing a wish to play some more soon. The day after the photograph of Guifery, Ghislaine Maxwell and Andrew was published. It should have mattered a lot more, but I guess you could file that under better late than never. I'm hearing some reports that even people's Ring doorbells may have been affected by this power outage, which, if you're expecting a delivery today, could be very, very serious news. Will Guy will bring us up to date shortly. And I'll give you that idiot's corner. I don't know why you're having a go at me for not having revealed it yet, because I was deliberately building up tension. That's the whole point of a hook and tease. Some people think you should deliver the answer quite shortly after you've done the hook and tease. Other people like me often forget and then pretend that they've deliberately delayed it in order to build up even more tension. And here is conclusive proof that today I forgot and then pretended that I deliberately delayed it in order to build up more tension. The big question is now, and no one knows the answer to this question, will I remember to do it after this?
This is LBC.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Can your phone drown out irritating noises in your videos? Can anybody hear me over this? Luckily, Audio Eraser on the Galaxy S25 Ultra gets rid of background noises in seconds. Can your phone do that? Galaxy can. Get 15% off Galaxy S25 Ultra with code S15.
Buy from Samsung.com by the 21st of October 2025. Use code at checkout. Voucher code can't be combined with any other offer. Samsung account login and network connection required.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10k every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:48 is the time. So this is from George, and it is one of the daftest messages I've ever received in all the years of doing this job. Are you ready? It would appear you care specifically. And remember, George has been listening to the same show that you have, because anything that could damage the monarchy fits with your leftism. No doubt you and Khan have had some fun conversations about this Prince Andrew debacle, offering a classic opportunity to further denigrate the royal family in general. Also, you should note that in the United Kingdom and in the 35 US states, the legal age of consent is 17 or younger. George, you sound like a bit of a menace, mate, not just an idiot. That last bit of your message is slightly disturbing. But equally disturbing is the idea. Do you think he means Sadiq Khan? Or the Aga Khan? I don't know. Sara Khan? What do you think me and Sadiq Khan socialise together and slag off Prince Andrew because of our leftism? Mate, I don't know what kind of websites you look at. The bit about the age of consent in other countries is perhaps a bit of a giveaway. But the political ones, you really need to get off. I mean, Idiot's Corner feels almost unfair on the other idiots, George, to put you in there today. But given that it's Monday morning and it's currently empty, off you pop. Will Guyatt is LBC's tech correspondent. I've heard from Bev, Will.
Good. What has Bev said?
She says, hi, James. Read this outage. My Ring doorbell is not working. Could you do a public service message for anyone expecting a delivery?
I was going to say, we've just had a jingle saying, message LBC on Alexa, and that's not working either at the moment. So that's also just gives you an extent of this problem. The best way to describe this, right, what's happened this morning, there's a thing called the domain name system that runs the internet, and Amazon Web Services, and I'll talk to you about exactly what that is in a second, runs a bit of it. And it's like the Yellow Pages, this domain name system. And basically, Jeff Capes has ripped the Yellow Pages in half this morning. So various bits of the internet has not been able to find itself to other addresses on the internet. And this goes to show you, James.
You know what? I'm keeping up so far. We'll carry on.
You shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. Lots of companies have now gone to Amazon. Don't just have a really successful retail business. They have a huge internet business behind the scenes, because they realized that when their website went global, they needed to put loads of intricate systems in place in order to keep it running. So Amazon also has a huge business running the cloud. Now, we all think of the cloud as some sort of nebulous place where the internet is saved. It's big data centers all around the world. One of these data centers went wrong around midnight US time in California, and that points to it being a failed software update or something. But it's taken so much of the internet down, it shows you that, you know, literally putting all your eggs in one basket leads to a really, really bad experience for all of us that rely on the internet.
So I just to translate it even more into layman's terms, Amazon put a system in place to look after its own interests and businesses, and then loads of other online companies, loads of other apps used the same directory, used the same system to...
Off the top of my head, if they're not making as much money from their web services, they're making close to the same amount of money as they do from their retail business globally.
Well, that's a relief, because I worry about that fellow.
You worry about
income
Jeff Bezos being back to his last billion.
I don't see him selling a big issue outside the global HQ anytime soon. So Snapchat, HMRC, Roblox, all the biggies have been affected. Is the oil tanker turning around? Rachel tells me Alexa is at least working in South Wales. I don't know who we need to alert.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that back in South Wales. Yeah, I think it will slowly come back into usage over the next hour or so, because all this stuff needs to propagate back around the internet. It doesn't all happen instantly. But the usual thing happens in these situations. The newsroom was on the phone to me earlier going, is this a hack? Yes. No, I reckon Ken has unplugged the server somewhere and it's just been plugged back in.
Do you really? Something completely simple, straightforward human error.
Yeah.
Okay. When did you first realise? What did you notice first?
The first thing I got was a phone call saying the internet's not working, because I was driving at the time.
So you didn't, because Eleanor asked me to check my bank account, which is because you're warned to be suspicious of people, aren't you, that tell you to check your bank account, even if it's the producer of your own radio.
Why is she asking you to check your bank account?
It was down.
Oh.
I couldn't get on my banking app.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's an interesting point, right? Because it does show you that so many companies now rely on one service to keep their costs down. 20 years ago, all these companies would have had servers somewhere in a room, you know, a door was locked and there was a computer behind it.
That's really interesting. Before you go.
Yeah.
For the benefit of younger listeners, who was Jeff Capes and why was he tearing up telephone
Jeff
directories?
Capes was the world's strongest man, and I clearly remember an episode of Sooty from about 1986 where Jeff Capes turned up, shocked Sooty's helper, and ripped two sets of the yellow pages. Yeah, but he ripped two sets of the yellow... This is when the yellow pages... I could rip a yellow pages now if it still exists, but back in the day, when the yellow pages was a thick old tome, yeah, Jeff Capes ripped two of them in quick succession.
So stuff that stays in your memory, Will Guy. It's extraordinary, isn't it? And he was a former police officer. I think he was still a police officer when he became World's Strongest Man. You wouldn't want to bump into him if you'd had a few too many falling out of the pub on a Friday night, would you?
I thought you meant Sooty then for a second.
No, he's fine. No, just Jeff Capes. Lovely stuff, Will. Mind how you go. 10:53 is the time. Have I ever shared my Sooty story on air? It's one of my best stories. But I don't know if I can share it on air because it's a little bit embarrassing for colleagues past. I don't think any colleagues present. I'll double check. Not as embarrassing, of course, as being friends with or associating with Prince Andrew. And, of course, you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. We haven't really addressed the question of whether or not he should be stripped of his princeship or princehood or whatever the correct word is. Largely, I suspect, because everybody thinks that he should, which means that despite playing something of a blinder on Friday, Buckingham Palace will probably have to wade back into this and go even further. It was a sort of gentleman's agreement to allow him to a promise that he would never use most of his titles again. The problem with a gentleman's agreement is it needs to be made by gentlemen. And while the king clearly is one, his brother clearly ain't. Neil's in Nottingham. Neil, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello.
I think it matters for one other reason as well. Or here's another reason it matters.
Yes.
I think the royal family has the chance to regenerate itself potentially through William and Kate. They've both, and I'm not necessarily, you know, saying this as a royalist per se, but they've both done a good job so far. And I think both of them have showed that they've got the type of values and skills and the rest of it to be able to actually put the royal family back on the map and to do it in a way that engages with younger generations as well. So if Andrew was allowed, if you like, to taint it more...
He hangs around, even if he doesn't turn up at Christmas or at Balmoral, they can't stop him turning up and coming through the front door, but he leaves a hideous stench hanging over the whole lot of them, doesn't he?
Yes, but also the wider concept of the royal family, and I think that William has already demonstrated this through the fact that it's been let known, obviously, that he's been in discussions and if anything, his approach would be harder than Charles. I think what he needs to do, in all honesty, is probably carry that a bit further, because if he were to maximise his potential to become king, if he does that in the right sort of way, he can kill two birds with one stone. He can continue to build his own brand and where the royals are going, and he can also be let it known that he was the one that finally pulls the rug out from Andrew, whatever the next stage is.
And saying this is the sort of thing that we simply won't tolerate or countenance
royal
family, in my modern royal family. You can't read too much into facial expressions, but as you say, it doesn't reach the media by accident that he is even more hardline on Andrew than his dad is. He really doesn't like the guy, does he? And that is almost, I hadn't thought of this angle, actually, but I have a tiny family, and I love everyone in it, but people with bigger families, the bigger the family, the more likely you are to hate someone in it. He really doesn't like the guy, I don't think.
Well, he's you know, as far as we can tell, his own values, if you like, and approach is the antithesis of Andrew. So there's that side to think about as well.
We can tell, indeed, Neil. But equally, he knows what his job is. His job is to get the institution squeaky clean. So the clever money says he wants it slimmed down. He wants fewer people on the payroll. And those who are will obviously have to, observe standards that are a million miles away from the kind of image that Andrew has, well, not image, the kind of conduct that Andrew has engaged in. And that is it. I mean, there's no one there going for the idea that he should stay as a prince. I mean, how could you defend that? How could you say, no, I definitely think he should stay on as a prince, because he vigorously denies all the allegations against him involving the idea that a man who has been to jail for trafficking young women trafficked a young woman to him three times. And he then wrote to that man saying, we must stay very, very close and I can't wait to play with you again. He should definitely stay as a prince. In fact, I hesitate to say this because I like the king. You sort of find yourself wondering whether or not they went far enough on Friday, given how impossible it would be to mount any defence. If it were me, I'd say, look, Parliament's got more important things to worry about. But one thing you might take away from this hour of radio, and they were clearly listening last week, because I like to think that we informed the decision, you and me. That's a joke, by the way. But one thing you can say with a degree of certainty is that nobody's going to defend the idea that he should actually remain as a prince. So why is he remaining as a prince? Tim's in Ellesmere Port with the last word on this one. What do you reckon, Tim?
Hello there. Yeah,
hello,
I think there's two prongs to it, really. One of them is the kind of patriotic element,
yes,
of what the royal family represents.
Yes.
And we're propping him up as one of the most celebrated and influential people in the UK by dint of him being a prince.
Yeah. Oh, thank God you said prince.
Yeah. I'll try and keep it clean. But yeah, I'd say...
The second bit is the king, isn't it? And the king's role, who he is.
The king's role, yes, in terms of what he represents and what the royal family represents.
Yeah.
But personally for me, particularly in relation to the judiciary of England and Wales, in that ultimately the king is the head of the judiciary.
Is he?
And what we've got is the king's brother having been permitted to pay himself out of somebody testifying or potentially bringing anything to trial.
Mm.
So the image that projects as to how kind of just and honourable the UK is and is permitted to be is quite negative as well.
Yes, it is. I mean, I guess the decision on that was ultimately Virginia Giuffre's, wasn't it? In a sense, but you're right. Perception is a huge part of it, and you can take away the title. It doesn't matter if you get it automatically by dint of being born the son to a queen. You automatically become a prince. Of course, you can take it away. It is bestowed by humans, and therefore it can be removed by humans. It is coming up to 11 o'clock. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. How long have you been listening to this nonsense? Not you, Tim, everybody. How long have you been listening to this nonsense? Keith says too long. I think he speaks for everyone, really, when he says that. If I said to you, I used to do a topic, it was even a motoring-y topic. I don't think I'm going to do it today, but it's back in the news again for reasons that I find absolutely riveting. I wonder if you can guess what it is.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, dozens of major websites and apps have been taken offline because of a technical problem. Firms including Lloyds, BT, Sky and Snapchat appear to be suffering outages as a result of an issue with Amazon Web Services. The firm underpins a wide range of internet platforms. LBC's technology correspondent Will Guyatt has more details.
To keep costs down, lots of people contract to third parties for web server space. And lots of companies use Amazon. Now, most of us know Amazon as the retailer, but because of Amazon's massive global retail business, they've also built up a very, very successful and profitable server business. And what appears to have happened is one of Amazon's major data centers in the US has lost its connection to the internet temporarily.
Amazon Web Services says it's working on a fix and is seeing significant signs of recovery. Thousands of Metropolitan Police staff are due to go on strike on Bonfire Night. Almost 6,500 members of the PCS union, including call handlers and custody staff, are to walk out in a row over pay. LBC's Joseph Draper has the exclusive story.
Bonfire Night is one of the worst nights of the year for crime, and now there's a risk London will be short of police officers who have to fill thousands of essential roles like 999 call handling.
Scotland Yard has been contacted for comment. Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, is expected in Israel as part of efforts to shore up the Gaza ceasefire. The Israeli military says it's begun renewed enforcement of the truce hours after carrying out a series of deadly airstrikes. They followed the deaths of two IDF troops in Rafah. The military is to be given new legal powers to shoot down unidentified drones threatening British bases. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, is set to announce the plans following a series of Russian incursions in NATO airspace. And England's cricketers have won the second T20 international of their series with New Zealand by 65 runs. Harry Brooks' side bowled the host for 171 after setting them a victory target of 237. England lead the series 1-0. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 43 points at 94.02. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, some sunny spells but also heavy showers across England and Wales, drier in Northern Ireland and Southern Scotland, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 11 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We're going to do something rather important now, and I'm not quite sure how to do it. I don't worry, though. We'll work it out, and we'll probably work it out together. But it speaks to a much broader problem, and it's one of what you might describe as the carpet-slippered creep of fascism. Or if not fascism, then something very, very close to racism. And it's about what is becoming normalised in public discourse. And what is becoming normalised in public discourse is stuff that would have been inconceivable even 5 years ago. There is a Daily Express journalist who called this weekend for Zara Sultana, the Labour MP, to be deported, presumably for the offence in his worldview of being brown or being a Muslim. I don't know. He has apologised and claimed that he is leaving Twitter in order to look after his mental health. Somewhat unfortunately, historic tweets have been found in which he says you should never take anybody seriously who cites their mental health when apologising for something. But, hey, I think we should give this person the benefit of the doubt. It works for a newspaper I used to work for, although it was a very different beast then. I'm fairly confident that at any point in the almost 30 years since I joined the Daily Express, somebody on the political staff calling for an elected MP to be deported for presumably either religious or ethnic reasons would be a sackable offence. I think this is the first time in almost three decades where I sit here and say I don't think it is a sackable offence anymore. Because how can the Daily Express sack him when Kemi Badenoch hasn't sacked Robert Jenrick for saying that he doesn't want to live in a country where he couldn't see any white faces on a visit to Birmingham? This is not normal discourse. And yet, I don't know, people like me, and let's be honest, there are very, very few of us in the UK media, despite the ludicrous claims from the armies of people that are comfortable with this kind of rhetoric, that people like me somehow dominate the discourse. That'd be me and Gary, would it? I don't know. But people like me don't like talking about the immigration conversation at the moment because it is hideous and it makes everybody who gets involved feel dirty. Some people love feeling dirty. It's all they've ever felt and they are currently really having their time in the sun. But how do you push back against this hideousness if the people that should be pushing back against it are not? If Kemi Badenoch is not going to caution Robert Jenrick for revealing that he doesn't want to live in a country where lots of people look like her, or the Daily Express is not going to caution a journalist for calling for an elected MP to be deported on ethnic or religious grounds, or quite possibly both. You have a deep shift, a deep and obvious shift in what you would have to describe as either fascistic or racist rhetoric, culminating in an extraordinary interview this week with a politician I hadn't previously heard of, but she's essentially called for people who have every right to be here to be expelled. Let me read you the quotes. There are also a large number of people in this country who came here legally, but in effect shouldn't have been able to do so. It's not the fault of the individuals who came here. They just shouldn't have been able to do so. They will also need to go home. What that will leave is a mostly but not entirely culturally coherent group of people. This is a politician called Katie Lam, L-A-M, who is a shadow Home Office minister. And I don't want to turn this into a competition, but I think that's the single most hideous thing I've heard a mainstream main party politician say in my lifetime. And I did a quick search when I came into work this morning, and it's been picked up by precisely nobody in the wider media. There is quite a lot of understandable anger and disgust on social media. I don't look at Twitter anymore because, well, it's part of the reason why politicians like Katie Lam think that they can say this sort of stuff with impunity now, because Elon Musk has very deliberately and very successfully created a racist sewer where racists thrive and persuade themselves that everybody else is racist too. But this is an extraordinary breach of what I would describe as the basic tenets of common decency. And it speaks to something that has been happening over the course of the last 12 months, that we are all a little bit guilty of not properly registering. So people like me, and therefore by association you, are not talking about it because it makes us feel so gross and so grim. People sitting next to Katie Lam in the House of Commons, or indeed sitting above her on the hierarchy of the Conservative Party, are not talking about it because they're frightened of upsetting all the potential voters who agree with her. It puts Nigel Farage in a very strange position, in that he could reasonably argue that he is no more racist in his pronouncements or no more far right wing in his attitudes than senior members of the Conservative Party, most obviously Robert Jenrick and this woman, Katie Lam. The idea that they will also need to go home. What do you think she means when she talks about a mostly but not entirely culturally coherent group of people? And if that's not profoundly anti-Semitic, then I don't know what is. What does that say to Orthodox Jews? What does that say to very many corners of our community where people lead deliberately and diversely different lives, culturally incohesive? And not a whisper. Not a sausage. Fact, this is probably hand on heart. Put your hand up if this is the first you've heard of it. You see? How is this happening? How are we becoming a country where senior mainstream politicians can call for people who have every right to be here to be deported? I don't know if she used that word, but what else does it mean? They will need to go home. Even Enoch Powell talked about voluntary repatriation. It was one of the first jokes I ever understood. One of the first political jokes I ever understood was when Lenny Henry did a joke about the National Front offering him £10, offering black people £10 to go back home. And he said, that's fantastic, I'm from Dudley. So he gets 10 quid and a bus fare home. When they use words like home, they will need to go home. I think her grandfather was a refugee. Where was his home? Do you think? Two things occur to me, you know, on mornings like this. The first is the immediate aftermath of Brexit, where my children's primary school, in a state primary school in West London, a Catholic primary school, had quite a high proportion of children whose parents were European Union citizens who'd come here under freedom of movement. There are a lot of Italians, actually, because it's a Catholic school, quite a few Albanians, a few French. It was a very cosmopolitan mix in primary school, both in terms of origin, that national origin, and in terms of socioeconomic status. And there were kids who were turning up at school in the aftermath of the Brexit vote, wondering whether they were going to have to leave the country because of the rhetoric that surrounded it and some of the stuff that was being said on television or put on posters. They were wondering whether they were going to have to leave the country. And my heart broke because I don't know how you have that conversation with your child. I had a conversation with two families at the time, one who didn't know how to have it. They could just reassure their kids, and one who'd already decided to leave. French family, he was a banker, very, very, very high earner, and immediately after the Brexit vote, he thought, well, I'm not staying here. And both of their children had asked their parents if this meant that they would have to leave the country. So one family could say, well, we're going to go anyway because of this atmosphere that has been created. And the other family didn't know what to do. I tried to give them a little bit of advice, one of my daughter's friends. And they can't convince a child. No, of course we won't, darling. Of course we won't. And what do you do now, 10 years later, when you've got someone from the Conservative Party saying, no, yes, you will have to go. You will need to go. You've got independent leave to remain. What does culturally coherent mean? What does culturally coherent mean? I find this woman absolutely despicable. Am I culturally coherent with her? I think this is the single most disgusting thing since Robert Jenrick last opened his mouth that a politician in the mainstream of our political discourse has said in the last... Well, this particular bit, that line there, they will also need to go home. I think that's the worst I've seen. I think that's worse. I think that's worse than anything Enoch Powell said in 1968. And where is the story? I mean, Enoch Powell was the biggest political story in the country for weeks, months, and it is still resonating now. The echoes of his racism still ring through the corridors of Westminster decades later. This woman can drop a little interview, friendly, largely interview in the Sunday Times, and say something that is obviously and outwardly hideous. It's not the fault of the individual. Can you think of a more dehumanizing turn of phrase than this? It's not the fault of the individuals who came here. They just shouldn't have been able to do so. They will also need to go home. What that will leave is a mostly but not entirely culturally coherent group of people. Well, I don't know who she means. How are they going to decide whether you're culturally coherent? Will they check that you're racist before you can stay? Will they check that you're white? Will they check that you're Christian? Will they check that you're Anglican? Will they check that you're a Capricorn? What does she mean? Will they check that you can quote Charles Dickens? What does culturally coherent mean? Will they check that you can deliver the rivers of blood speech from memory? Will that be enough to get you over the line if you're not too brown? And speaking of brown, I don't know if you've heard Nick Lowles, the founder of Hope Not Hate, on this program, or indeed anywhere else. He tells a story that I can't get out of my head at the moment. He tells it in two ways. And his political awakening came during the heyday of the National Front in the 1970s, some two decades before this woman was born, when "There Ain't No Black in the Union Jack" was routinely chanted on our streets, and when people would be chased down the road for the sin of being dark-skinned, where violence, skinhead violence against ethnic minorities was a fact of life for these people, because they were not culturally coherent, as Katie Lamb might say. And this is when Nick Lowles, whose mother was from Mauritius, first started hearing about compulsory deportation, first started hearing rhetoric like they will need to go home. And he felt, in his childhood way, that that his mum would be on that list. He was worried his mum would be deported. And you're a kid, right? So you can't always have these conversations with your parents. The things you're frightened of as children are often the things that you're least likely to talk to your parents about. So number one, you have an 8-year-old boy sitting in suburban Britain worried that his mummy is going to be deported because people like Katie Lamb say they will need to go home. And the next bit of the story didn't actually fully register with me the first time he told me. It was the second time he was coming into the studio that I wanted him to repeat it. He used to go on holiday to, I don't know, Brittany or somewhere mildly warmer than here. Don't at me with your meteorological complaints. And he wouldn't get out of the tent on the beach, and his family didn't know why. And it's because he is, to all intents and purposes, Anglo-Saxon looking or culturally coherent. But because of his mother's Mauritian heritage, or because of his own Mauritian heritage via his mother, he had a little bit more melanin than a Celt like me. So if he was in the sunshine, he would go quite dark quite quickly. So you have an 8-year-old child worried that he might not be culturally coherent enough to avoid compulsory deportation or being told that he will need to go home. Or, you know, you can stay, 8-year-old boy, but your parents are off. Deliberately sheltering himself from the sunshine because he was worried that if his suntan was too dark, he'd be on the list that people like Katie Lamb are now making in the pages of the Sunday Times on an almost daily basis. They will also need to go home. What that will leave is a mostly but not entirely culturally coherent group of people. Where are the Nick Lauses of today, I wonder? How does this rhetoric reach you? I am so privileged. Look, I'm Irish, and I can be a bit of a troublemaker from the point of view of people like Honest Bob Jenrick and Katie Lamb and the rest of them. I believe Nigel Farage recently called me a moron in this very studio. So it's always good to know that your words aren't going completely ignored and your ability to see clearly precisely what these people are is clear to them. But it doesn't really affect me. It's going to be a long time before any of them come after people with apostrophes in their name. Never say never. That's what Martin Niemöller taught us. But it's going to be a long time before the Irish are back on the list with the dogs and the blacks for not being sufficiently culturally coherent in the worldview of people like Katie Lamb. But the fact that no one else is talking about it today, I'm not sure anybody else even noticed, except some of the usual suspects fighting the good fight on social media, in my case, Blue Sky, where once again Sundar Katwala is doing brilliant work, pointing out the parallels with Enoch Powell, pointing out the horrors of what is being said here. And it was an academic called Ben Ansell, who's Professor of Comparative Democratic Institutions at Nuffield at the University of Oxford, who pointed out that this is not normal discourse. He wrote, "It is not just a bit of fun for a Sunday paper interview. It is beyond the realms of the concept of decency shared across the political spectrum until last year." Bringing that Daily Express quotes, journalist end quotes back into it, he writes, "Apropos of nothing, I really do think UK journalists and politicians need some reminding that mass deportation of legal immigrants, particularly those with permanent status, is far more extreme than even Trump's America and would basically place Britain completely on its own among democracies. Shadow Home Office Minister puts us slightly to the right of Genghis Khan and it gets picked up, as far as I can tell, precisely nowhere." So, remember when we came across that line about "I don't mean you"? When the racist would say, "I voted Brexit to get rid of all the immigrants." You'd say, "Well, I'm an immigrant." And they'd say, "Oh, I don't mean you." I think they mean you now. You've got your independent leave to remain. You're here legally. Or you're waiting for your independent leave to remain. They will also need to go home. How does this rhetoric, whether it's a Daily Express journalist calling for an elected politician to be deported because she's brown or Muslim or both, whether it's a Shadow Home Office Minister in the Sunday Times newspaper calling for everybody who doesn't fit her notion of cultural coherence to be removed from the country and sent, quotes, home, end quotes, even if this is home, even if this is the only home your children have ever known. When Robert Jenrick talks about not liking it, not wanting to live in a country where all the faces that he sees are black or brown, despite choosing to live in a village where all the faces that he sees are exclusively white. How does it change the way you feel about this country, about your home, when these voices are not being challenged and silenced as they were in Enoch Powell's day, but they are being amplified and lionized? How does it make you feel? I can't believe how quickly it's happened until I look at America. 0345 6060 973. Did I say independent? Everyone's picking me up on my words. I said independent leave to remain. I should have said indefinite. Forgive me. It's not the biggest issue under discussion here, but details matter, facts matter. And while we're talking about semantics, what do you think she means when she says culturally coherent? Hand on heart, I want you to tell me what you think she means. I've got thoughts. What do you think she means? It's within, a fortnight of an attack on a synagogue in Manchester, and she's talking about culturally coherent groups of people? How does it make you feel about your home? And who do you think she's talking about when she talks about culturally coherent groups of people? And am I going mad? Or is this up there with the single most disgusting contributions to public discourse you've ever heard from a mainstream main party politician? It is 11:23.
This is LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10k every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
25 minutes after 11 is the time. It's new, isn't it? We sometimes fall into the old boiled frog problem, is that we don't notice how serious changes are because they've been happening incrementally. But here it is, a relatively senior member of the modern Conservative Party, someone who is, I mean, at some point everybody is mooted as a potential future leader, calling for people who are here legally to be sent, quotes, home, end quotes, because they are not, quotes, culturally coherent, end quotes. How does it make you feel about your home to hear stuff like this now in the mainstream? And what do you think she means by culturally coherent? Norman's in Epsom. Norman, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. Good morning.
Hello,
it's disturbing that this rhetoric is being ramped up. Yes, she's being talked about as a potential future leader. She's got the blonde hair. She's got the Thatcherite appearance that they're always trying to regurgitate. But it just spills over into potential attacks on people. Whether they are Asian or black, as long as you look different, then you become fair game.
She couldn't mean anything else by culturally coherent. I mean, I'm sure she'd argue plenty of people of colour are integrated, but if you've got a racist mob running down the street with the full support of conservative politicians, I don't know quite how you can prove you're culturally coherent.
They're not going to stop and wait. So it's part of... It feels like a concerted campaign. The flags are part of this to make people feel uncomfortable. You know, I mean, I've got nothing against the odd flag here and there on a civic building.
No,
they look great on a civic building, but on every lamppost down the street, hundreds of them, then that is a form of intimidation. And the next step is potentially physical violence against people. Let's say verbal and then physical. It gives people license to be nasty, and they are taking it. It's a shame. It's really sad. I'm West Indian background. We went through this my parents went through this in the 50s and 60s, as a teenager and with siblings a little bit older. They went through that in the 70s and 80s. And it just keeps coming back, this sense of there's a group that just does not want to accept migrants. Now, I think what she's getting at is the sense that there are certain parts of the country, certain towns, old industrial towns, we've heard it a bit with the Aston debate, that there's a sense that there are no-go areas. And it's the dependence of people that the ones that we wanted to let in, it's their dependence. The ones that we didn't want to let in, the grandparents and the children and the aunts and the wives, we didn't really want them. We wanted some people to come and work, but we didn't want all the dependents. And it's all those dependents who they feel haven't integrated. We want them out. We want them to go.
I don't even know what they mean by integrated quite often. You go back to Birmingham shortly before Powell's speech, and the Conservative Party was campaigning successfully on a ticket that said, if you want an N-word for a neighbour, vote Labour. So
you can't get more integrated than Birmingham. I grew up in Walsall, so I know Birmingham. Mm. You can't get more integrated and people living happily with one another. What she means by integrated is you look different. Your clothes are different.
She would probably not say, and I've seen this in discourse again, I don't know that she'd say Rishi Sunak can't be English because he's a brown Hindu, which I read in some coverage of this on...
Well, her colleague did. I mean, Priti Patel, or was it Suella, said that he can't be English.
Well, she can't. Did they say it about themselves, or did they say it about him? I don't know.
Well, she said about him and herself that she can't be English. What do you say about? I mean, what would she say to half the England football team? I don't know. This is just becoming a bit. It's all becoming very sad, very silly simultaneously, and
It's silly until it isn't. How does it make you feel? And I never know this. This is, I don't know, white privilege is an important phrase. It's not always a massively helpful one, but I don't feel. I can't really feel in my bones what you might feel when you know she's talking about, at the very least, people like you.
The sense is, what more can someone like me, and I won't go through my history, but what more could I do to integrate? I can't do any more. I cannot, in any shape or form, do any more. And, from a very early age, as a small boy, you recognize, I'm different. But you know what? I don't care, because my difference is going to be my superpower. My difference and standing out, I will use to demonstrate my excellence. And why should I worry then about other people? But it keeps coming back that no matter what you do...
You can never do enough, can you?
You can never do enough.
For people like Katie Lamb.
You've talked about Sadiq Khan, no matter what he does, it will never, ever be enough.
Is he culturally coherent, do you think?
Is she?
No, is he? Is Sadiq Khan sufficiently culturally coherent? Would he have to win four elections or five elections to be mayor of the capital
city? Wins. He could be prime minister.
Still not culturally coherent.
It would not be. And I guess, again, if you think about Rishi Sunak lighting his Diwali lamps outside down the street. For some people, that would have been offensive. That probably would have been offensive, saying, this is a Christian country, why are we celebrating a Hindu festival in such a way? For some people, that would have felt culturally offensive.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it for a minute. And you remind us to, it's today, isn't it? We should be wishing our Hindu listeners happy Diwali. It's because that's what our country is, and in many ways always has been. Something of a melting pot. Norman, I'm really late for the news. I'm just looking at some more elements of this interview that I read at the weekend. She worked for Goldman Sachs. You can't really work there if you're thick. But goodness me, her grasp of history and 20th century politics is quite extraordinarily bovine. More on that after the headlines with Thomas Watts.
A major technical outage is affecting dozens of websites, online games and mobile apps. The problems appear to be related to an issue at Amazon Web Services, which sits behind many popular platforms. Thousands of Metropolitan Police staff are set to strike on Bonfire Night. Scotland Yard says it's made a reasonable offer to the PCS union to resolve the row over London allowances. Four Reform UK councillors have been suspended following the leak of a row at a virtual meeting. The footage follows reports of a split between the party's backbenchers on Kent County Council. LBC weather, sunny spells and heavy showers across England and Wales. Northern Ireland and southern Scotland a bit drier. A high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 25 minutes to 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And I'm just wondering how it feels in your family when the rhetoric of deportation, of being removed, despite having a legal right to be here, has moved into the mainstream. Thanks most recently to a Conservative politician called Katie Lamb, who gave an interview. I think I keep saying the Sunday Times. It was the Saturday Times. Forgive me. I read it yesterday. That's the problem with not having print editions anymore, isn't it? But she's talking about people not being culturally coherent enough, and she's talking about people being told that they need to go home, and she is talking about people who are currently here legally. I guess the argument about getting rid of all the illegal immigrants has died because no one ever really disagreed with that. As long as you're actually talking about people who are here illegally rather than people who were forced to travel here irregularly as a consequence of the asylum policies brought in by the Conservative government. But how does it play in your family when this kind of rhetoric moves out of what would once have been National Front marches and into the upper echelons of the Conservative Party? This is the bit that, I mean, either I'm not understanding it properly or she needs to read a book. A committed Brexiteer, Natch, Lamb believes these structures are no longer fit for purpose, and these structures are our current systems of rights and laws created in the shadow of the Second World War. It was a totally understandable reaction at the time, she says. Put simply, the international rules-based order is based on the idea that everyone would want to be nice to each other post-war. Wow. Okay, so we come out of a period of Holocaust, something which our own family has hideous experience of, but I'm never 100% sure that you have to, that you should tell people you can't have that opinion because of what happened to your grandparents. I don't know, I mean, I understand where that comes from. It's not something I fully sign up to myself, because it kind of ends up sometimes sounding as if you're telling people who have immigrant parents that they're not allowed to have concerns about immigration. And it's a bit trickier than it originally appears. But the idea that someone from a family steeped in Holocaust could think that the international rules-based order was based on everyone wanting to be nice to each other rather than making sure that it couldn't happen again, because we understood exactly how depraved humanity could be. We understood exactly, as a consequence of the Holocaust, what man's inhumanity to man could lead to and look like. So you're rejecting the rights and laws brought in to make sure that it could never happen again, on the grounds that they were brought in because everybody thought that everybody wanted to be nice to each other. The reality is that's not true, and loads of people will exploit that generosity. Which people? If we're not going to stand up for ourselves, we will lose the most precious things that we have. Okay. Sean's in Coventry. Sean, what are you hearing?
I guess I'm going to justify myself first, right, is that I'm Indian, or I'm British, but my dad's Indian, born in India. My mum's Indian, but born in Britain. My wife's white, so my kids are mixed race. I served in the army, and yet you still get the feeling, I still get the feeling that I'm not welcome. And it's things like doing things to, or you almost exaggerate your Britishness,
yeah,
in a way to try and fit in. So, I mean, look, with a name like Sean, which is, we're sort of about third or fourth generation Catholics, which is uncommon in the eyes of people that I went to school with, or, sure, or kind of.
Well, it's statistically quite uncommon as well, I think, isn't it?
If you look at kind of the population of Goa and the big Catholic influence there, I guess it's statistically, yeah, it's different here. But
sure.
I mean, look, when I was growing up, kids would always be like, "Oh, what's your real name though?" And it's just like, "Well, no, Sean." Yeah, but what's your proper name though? Like, what's your Indian name? And I'm like, I don't have one, right? And even my son, my eldest son, who doesn't look Indian, he's more white than he is Indian. Experienced racism at primary school, and that was like 10 years ago. And it's like, well, how much more integrating do we need to do? Like, what else? In fact, my kids are now starting to have the same skin color as you guys, right? So how much more integration do we need to have before we are integrated? Like,
well, oddly, the 1930s taught us that lesson as well, and it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter whether you, once that categorization has been determined as the other and that which must be removed, it doesn't matter whether you practice that religion or whether you have, several branches of your family tree free of any, if it can be proved that you are not, if you are part of the culturally incoherent cohort, then you're on the next boat out of here. That's where this logic always leads. Whether she's actually capable of understanding what she's saying, given her comments about the post-war settlement, I don't know. But they will also need to go home. So I tell you what scares me when I talk to people like you is that, for reasons I don't fully understand, even if you accept that these arguments are made in good faith, which for the record I don't, and you accept that there are some people who deserve to be spoken of or treated in this way, which I don't, who decides? I just have images of people like you, Sean, in front of a panel that Katie Lamb sits on, judging your cultural coherence, asking you questions or checking your messages, or just and deciding whether or not you are sufficiently culturally coherent to stay here.
The question I've asked a few people of a mainly older generation is, well, what have you done for your country to make you more British than me?
I got born here, to people who were born here, to people who were born here, to people. I've not done anything, mate. I don't actually do any. I don't even pick up litter when I'm out and about. But I can feel better about my own pathetic character by pointing out that something, some accident, applies to me that doesn't apply to you, Sean. Thank you for asking. I presume that's where they're coming from, because I'm damned if I know.
That's pretty much it, though, isn't it? It's like, okay, what, you put a British flag up on a lamppost, now all of a sudden you're the most British person in the world, right? But actually, what have you done to improve your never mind your country, what have you done to improve your local area? Well, I spoke to my local MP on Saturday, and she was asking me to kind of go in and look at becoming a local councillor, because thought for me, I was like, look, these are the issues at hand, right? Like, this is what needs improving, this is what you need to get done. And that's like me getting involved in my community, trying to make my community as good as I can make it, trying to make everything better. But sitting on your backside watching GB News and assuming that you've got all the answers, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, even my father-in-law, he sat there the other day and he was just like, oh yeah, look at all these small boats. And I'm like, well, look, the small boats aren't the reason that our rivers are sewages now. The small boats aren't the reason that our gas bills are astronomical, or our food bills are astronomical. It's like, none of that is because of migrants or, I mean, look, we call them immigrants, but actually if you moved abroad, James, you'd be called an expat, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So again, why don't we call them expats? Because the language in that sense is completely different as well. And it's like, well, you've got to get up and do something to show that you're British and coherent within the culture.
It doesn't matter, though. You can be elected mayor of London three times on the bounce and you'll still be an absolute hate figure for these characters. You'll be the one that they hate the most. That's the thing that I find most insidious, the conversation about integration. How much more integrated can you be than to be elected mayor of London three times on the bounce? But you somehow become the hate figure. I look at Elon Musk's platforms and the attacks that are visited upon our mayor by everybody from Donald Trump down, and it's clear that is not the problem. The problem is not integration. Can you track it at all? I mean, getting worse. You mentioned that your boy was abused 10 years ago. Some of the kids asking you what your, quotes, real name, end quotes, were are going to be as outraged and disgusted by the notion of deportation as you and I are. You know, kids are curious and sometimes a little bit insensitive. But can you, I mean, I'm reading this comment from the professor saying the last year has been absolutely shocking in context. That's public discourse. I don't know how that lands in private lives, in personal lives.
Well, I think people are more confident about their racism, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the word, isn't it?
Yeah, because it used to be that you call somebody racist and they're ashamed of it, right? And I get now people still are, like, really up in arms and you get called a racist.
Oh, they're still livid, for now. Steve Bannon telling them to embrace the accusation hasn't quite worked yet, but that's the plan. That's the master plan.
Well, that's kind of the end goal, right, is that you can be overtly racist, and that's kind of the
ambition. You don't have to feel bad about it.
You wear it with pride. Like, you have a badge of honour that says, yeah, I can be like this. But I think people are a lot more confident in their racism now because, I mean, look, I walk around and I went to a big Coventry fan, so last year I was a season ticket holder.
Yeah.
And going to the toilet at half-time, and this black guy walks out of the toilet, and the white guy is like, says to his lad must have been no more than about 12, 13, don't go in there after that N-word. Hard R, everything, and nobody batted an eyelid. And it was just like, this is how confident people are now about their racism.
And I don't know where they sit on the culturally coherent palette unveiled on Saturday by the Conservative politician and shadow minister, Katie Lamb. Who is culturally coherent now, the racist or the victim of racism? I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I'm not even sure she knows what she's talking about, because the thing about this kind of rhetoric is you don't have to. That's the thing about dog whistles, isn't it? Although I don't know that this counts as a dog whistle. They will also need to go home. What that will leave is a mostly but not entirely culturally coherent group of people. That's not a dog whistle, is it? That's just a whistle.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Monumental development since we last spoke concerning Prince Andrew, because that's all he is now. The Duke of York title has gone. Now he is just plain Prince Andrew. But for many, including it would appear a growing number of MPs, that is too much. Labour MP and Secretary of State for Education, Women and Equalities, Bridget Phillipson. Would you support parliamentary procedure to officially remove him his title?
This isn't for the government to insert ourselves into, but, you know, MPs will often want to discuss a number of topics and have vehicles within parliament to do so. Should they choose.
But would you support that?
Well, we support what the royal family have done so far and the statement that they have put out, but...
You wouldn't go further?
Well, as I say, Prince Andrew holds the title of Prince because he is the son of a monarch, and that's as it is.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
With cyber security from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
Back tomorrow morning from 7, LBC.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead... Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments and book your flight to St. Martin from £679 flying from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet. She's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Can your phone drown out irritating noises in your videos? Can anybody hear me over this? Luckily, Audio Eraser on the Galaxy S25 Ultra gets rid of background noises in seconds. Can your phone do that? Galaxy can. Get 15% off Galaxy S25 Ultra with code S15.
Buy from Samsung.com by the 21st of October 2025. Use code at checkout. Voucher code can't be combined with any other offer. Samsung account login and network connection required.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, always.
Yes, quite.
I read e-books. I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh, they make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It's 11:49. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Another story. Well, I presume you have seen this one if you follow the news closely. Nigel Farage's partner has allegedly been embroiled, reports the Daily Telegraph of all places, in an investigation into allegations of fraud at a Eurosceptic group she ran in Brussels. Whatever next? Laura Ferrari served as executive director of the Institute for Direct Democracy in Europe, a think tank, yep, until it was forced into liquidation. That story is developing. I know she was working as a waitress when she met Farage, so I wonder how she ended up getting a rather juicy job like that. I'm sure that he'll tell us, given the opportunity. 10 to 12 is the time. Talking of racism, we are discussing Katie Lamb, a shadow minister, I think, in the Home Office, a Conservative MP, who gave an interview to the Times on Saturday that, to be fair, even the Times didn't really seem to appreciate the horror of what she was saying, but I do, and you do, and I want to know how it makes you feel to learn that if the Conservatives get back into power, then if you are here legally, you could be removed. You could be deported. I mean, again, a bit like the parents trying to reassure the child, I don't think you will be. I don't think this country will ever become a place where people with a legal right to be here are removed, potentially violently. But I'm sure people felt like that at every point in history, shortly before countries became places where people with a legal right to be here could indeed be removed. And listen, the language is, I'm afraid, unequivocal. I wish it wasn't. I wish the language were open to interpretation or were in some way questionable, but it's not. They will need to go home. The thing with the word they, whenever people use the word they in these kind of contexts, they'll never tell you precisely who. They'll dress it up euphemistically with phrases like this. They will also need to go home. What that will leave is a mostly but not entirely culturally coherent, it's a bit Dolores Umbridge that, isn't it? Culturally coherent group of people. There are also a large number of people in this country who came here legally, but in effect shouldn't have been able to do so. Well, what if they came here legally, but according to you, shouldn't have been able to do so, but are really culturally coherent? Do you get rid of that? You see, this is why I hate this kind of rhetoric. It should not be allowed to go unpassed. It should be picked apart like a Dover sole. So, okay, what is the category of people that you think shouldn't have been able to come here in the first place? And then she will presumably tell you. And then you say, well, what if they are culturally coherent? Because you're judging them by the circumstances in which they came here. You're not judging them by what they've done since they got here. Cultural coherence is something that can only be established after arrival. Means of arrival is something that can only be established on arrival. So how on earth can you say that the people who didn't have any right to come here, unspecified, unexplained, unclear, are going to end up being culturally incoherent or not part of a culturally coherent group of people? I don't think she could, because these are not intellectual positions. These are base bigotries. Doesn't matter how well educated you are or whatever words you may use, like culturally coherent, you're essentially saying, we will get rid of the people I do not like the look of. We will get rid of the people I, Katie Lamb, do not like the look of. And don't ask me any further questions, otherwise I'll call you some. I'll accuse you of reaching for the racism card. Has she done that yet? Can we check? Has she ever accused people criticising her of playing the racism card or of say you can't say what you want in this country anymore without being called a racist? I bet you 50p she has. But I'm only going to pay one person 50p if she hasn't, not all of you. Neil's in Plymouth. Neil, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, one of the questions you said just a minute ago is how does this make me feel?
Yeah.
And scared. It's making my children scared. I'm scared. So just a bit of background. My wife's father is British. She was born in Watford. But because she was born before 2006 and her parents weren't married, she took her mum's nationality, which is she's a dual Finnish American citizen. Through her American nationality, she got indefinite to leave to remain when she was two.
Okay.
She's lived in this country her whole life. She has worked in care homes. She's currently working with drug and alcohol misuse, so helping people of our society get clean and better themselves. And my 14-year-old daughter came home from school after kind of hearing bits and pieces and said, is mum going to be taken away?
Because people with indefinite leave to remain have been put on the list by Farage and his mates, and now Katie Lamb appears to be joining in. Or going further,
exactly,
arguably.
And, you know, the Tories are only doing it because, you know, they're losing so much in the polls that they see what the rhetoric reform are doing. Maybe we can pull some voters back if we just copy them. And kind of going down that route. And, you know, like my wife has quite a serious health condition. She does get some help from the state from it. She has, like I said, she's paid into the system. Her father's British, paid into the system her whole life. And Zia Yusuf saying, oh, sorry, you won't be able to get that anymore just because... What exactly? She was born in Watford and lived here. My wife is... How is my wife not culturally appropriate?
She's culturally coherent.
Coherent. Mm. So she is as mixed as they come. Her grandfather is Indian. Her grandmother is Finnish. You know, and my children, you know, they have... for me, they're about as culturally coherent as you can imagine because they see the British culture, they see the Indian culture, they see a Finnish culture... and they accept everybody for who they are, regardless. For me, that's being culturally coherent, not, you know, just a single-track mind. For me, if you're not white, you're not welcome. And, you know, but my wife is white. But does that mean she's okay? Or does that mean she's not okay? Like,
I don't know. What did you say to your 14-year-old?
I didn't know what to say. I just said, oh, it's just all blasé. It's just ignore it, darling. It's fine. Don't worry. Nothing's going to happen. Like, what am I saying? I don't know, right? I'm scared. I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
And it's not much comfort to say to you, oh, from what you've told me, I'm sure she doesn't mean you. Because how many people listening will think, well, I think she might mean me. I don't know what she means by culturally coherent. And here it is. All I did was Google Katie Lamb racist, and here it is. This is her. It's easy to dismiss uncomfortable truths as, quotes, racist, end quotes. The British establishment often does. Because nothing says anti-establishment like working at Goldman Sachs and then becoming an advisor to various Conservative MPs. That's a well-trodden path for cultural rebels throughout the ages. And, of course, people who do racism remain very cross about being called racist or being accused of racism. But what do you hear when you're told that they will also need to go home? What that will leave is a mostly but not entirely culturally coherent group of people. Oh, mate. You're quite distressed by this, and I don't like it when that happens on my watch, because I like to comfort people.
So I saw a post on Facebook the other day, and it was just a stupid little post, like, would you sign up for World War III if it came about? And there was comments on there such as, not for the P word Britain, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Where have we gone wrong? What has happened to us as a society that is okay? It comes from the top down. It comes from Farage and Zia and all the rest of them. That kind of, they're making that those that are,
you know, Johnson arguably was an earlier adopter of it, because, you know, it's only 12 years since The Sun described Farage as racist for words he said on this programme as racism. Even The Sun knew racism when it saw it in 2014. And then everything changed. Everything sort of began to change. But Johnson and his talk of smiling pickaninnies and women in letterboxes probably played a much bigger part in this process. Because, you know, the fellow using the N-word at the football in Coventry or the person using the P-word on your Facebook page are essentially being told by people like Boris Johnson, Nigel Farage, Honest Bob Jenrick and now Katie Lamb that they're in the right.
And it's, you know, you've got GB News, for example. I keep, you know, everything they share is, oh, an immigrant did this, and I'm not saying that what the crimes that they've committed are absolutely abhorrent and it should be.
They are as abhorrent as they would be if they had been committed by someone who's not an immigrant. There's no mystery here or difficulty.
No, but the point I'm trying to make is currently down in Devon at the moment, there's quite a lot of it going on, quite a lot of reports of exactly the same crimes.
Right.
And I keep forwarding them, saying, do you fancy putting this on your news page? Because, you know, what's the difference? There is no difference. It's exactly the same, except for actually, this doesn't follow our narrative because they're not an immigrant or they're not brown. So actually, we won't report on that.
I think it was 40% of the men arrested at the protests outside that hotel in Epping had previously come to the police's attention over domestic abuse allegations. And these statistics matter, you know. They really do. And so do these words. I've got nothing to add to what Neil said. You could not only hear what he said, you could also hear the pain in his voice. And that's not there by accident. It's put there by people like Katie Lamb, who know what they're doing. They must. They all do.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 12 o'clock, dozens of major websites and apps, including banks, social and gaming platforms, are experiencing technical problems. The issue is linked to Amazon Web Services, the retail giant's cloud computing arm. It says it's seeing significant signs of recovery. The technology expert Stuart Miles says outages aren't necessarily becoming more common, but they are more noticeable.
Mainly because of the amount of stuff that we do online, but also the amount of services that are investing in using that handful of customers. And so when we saw it a while back, didn't we, with someone changed a setting in the US and that like wiped out a load of air traffic control stuff. that it's very easy to make a small change or for one element to go wrong.
President Trump's special envoy and son-in-law have arrived in Israel for talks on the Gaza ceasefire. Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, who helped to broker the deal, are involved in efforts to shore up the agreement. Both sides accused each other of breaching the truce over the weekend. Civilian staff in the Metropolitan Police are to strike on bonfire night in a row over pay. The PCS union says up to 6,500 of its members, including 999 call handlers and custody officers, will walk out. David Parrock from the PCS has told LBC that further action could follow.
The impact is likely to be that there will be far fewer police officers available across the Met because they will have to backfill all of those roles, many of which are obviously critical roles, with police officers. And there are not, you know, vast swathes of police officers available.
The Met says it's made a reasonable pay offer and is stepping up plans to minimise disruption. Reform UK has suspended four councillors after footage of a heated virtual meeting was leaked. The party took control of Kent County Council in May. A spokesperson says the councillors are being investigated over evidence they brought the party into disrepute. And Graham Potter has been confirmed as the new Sweden manager, weeks after being sacked by West Ham. He replaces Jon Dahl Tomasson, who was sacked after getting just a point from Sweden's opening four World Cup qualifiers. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 93.91. That is up 37. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, some sunny spells and heavy showers across England and Wales. Drier for Northern Ireland and Southern Scotland. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Do you want a bit of fun? I've got a missing word round for you that's actually quite good. But then there was a story this weekend, and I found myself desperately trying to come up with a funny headline for it. I was going to stick it on Blue Sky. And I failed. I couldn't think of a funny line. And I know Shakespeare quite well. Not brilliantly well. Oddly, given the parts I played in Shakespeare plays at school, I can work my way through Hamlet, King and King Lear using quotes exclusively from Horatio and Kent, which is not much use when you're sitting at A-level, because although they were intrinsic to the plot and indeed the progression of action in both plays, they don't have a great deal to say of importance. Neither Horatio nor Kent are what you would call, they're quite big parts, but they're not what you would necessarily call quite important. What they are, and I quite like this depiction of them both, they are the only good men left in rotten worlds, Horatio and Kent. But I mention it solely because I know my way around Shakespeare. And there was a story this weekend about someone backing an SUV into a home that had previously been inhabited by William Shakespeare's daughter. The Grade 1 listed Hall's Croft in Stratford-upon-Avon was left damaged after a car accidentally reversed into a corner of it on Friday morning. And I couldn't think of a headline. The Daily Mail have gone with such a weak one that I'm thinking maybe there isn't a better one to be had. And much as I don't like the Daily Mail, the fellas on the backbench and the ladies on the backbench who put together headlines and things like this normally have a pretty good sense of humour. And they've gone for, is this a bad driver I see before me? Which doesn't work on any real comic level, does it? Because it would have to at least rhyme with or scan the same as dagger. Is this a dagger I see before me? And it doesn't. Is this a bad driver I see before me? So I'm doing this. We've never done it before. Come up with a funnier one, okay? And send it into 84850 or indeed WhatsApp it to 03456060973. There must be a Shakespeare quote or a Shakespeare reference to report upon the fact that someone has backed their car into William Shakespeare's daughter's old house. It's a beautiful house, actually, that is rather better than this one. And oddly enough, this story is not entirely irrelevant to the one that I want to discuss with you next. I think, unless you can do a better job than me of insulating me from accusations of hypocrisy, I think we're about to do a motoring topic. We should have a portentous sound effect there, Keith. No, that's rubbish. Have we got a dun-dun-dun? I think we're about to do a motoring topic. And oddly, I mentioned this to you a couple of hours ago, but you probably weren't paying attention. That's not bad, actually, to park or not to park. Well done, Chris. I used to do this topic all the time. I mean all the time. In many ways, I think I cut my radio phone-in host teeth on this topic, or on issues adjacent to this topic. You know that thing that we all do? Well, I say we all do it. Well, I do it, and a few colleagues definitely do it, where you kind of get off, you find yourself riffing on a subject, and because your jokes or your points are landing, you turn the dial up ever so slightly. So you only do it on the stories. What was I doing last week? The things that you zip up, the jumpers that you zip up. They drive me nuts. And then I don't know why the Facebook, when I got home, Facebook was full of them, even more than usual. The woolen ones, not like rugby shirts or sports things, but woolen jumpers that have a zip up collar. So I said, yes, like the pictures everybody sent me after the show on Friday. And I don't know why they upset me. They obviously don't upset me quite as much as I was trying to convey on Friday, because I just felt the wind in my sails. And therefore, I slightly exaggerated how, but I do genuinely not like them. I think the first subject that I found that feeling with was what we used to call 4x4s, and we now called SUVs. I bumped into a bloke I'd been at school with about 5 years after I started doing this job. When I look, between you and me, no one had really noticed I was doing this job 5 years after I started doing it. But he'd like had it on in the car or in a taxi, and he said, "Oh yes, you go on about SUVs all the time. You go on about 4x4s all the time." And I thought, "No, I don't. I do heavy, hard hitting politics. I'm the scourge of the hypocritical right. I mean, how dare you? I did used to talk about my Vauxhall Zafira quite a lot." But I used to get on my high horse. I used to get on the highest of horses when it comes to what we used to call 4x4s and what we now call SUVs. So, for example, I would have greeted the news of an SUV backing into William Shakespeare's daughter's old house in a state of high dudgeon. I really would have been. You see what these vehicles do? They're even going after the bard. They're even going after the bard's memory. And it would have been 60% sincere and 40% exaggerated for comic relief, all right? I don't know if I've got that anymore. I don't know if I don't have that animus anymore. It's so long. I lost that battle so spectacularly. Of all the battles I've lost in the course of my 20 years on the radio, the idea that we might be able to stem the tide of ridiculously oversized vehicles on streets of cities that were designed for horses and carts is probably the biggest battle of all that I have lost. But here we are, because it is a Welsh council to whom we turn, Cardiff, no less. They're going to charge you more if you've got a stupid car than if you've got a normal car. So Range Rovers, SUVs, even, I suspect, if they are electric and environmentally friendly, you are going to be penalised, at least to park. Ideally, they're bringing a congestion charge that is reflective of how heavy your car is or how big it is, how much volume it takes up. You're going to have to pay more if you've got a stupid car than you do if you've got a normal car. I'm not even sure I can use the word normal in this context, because the stupid is the new normal, isn't it? There's so many stupid cars around that you could argue that they have actually become the new normal, and the people in the stupid cars are the people in the normal cars. But I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to ask you two questions. The first is this. Do you approve? You will not be surprised to learn that I do. I would charge you double. I don't know where the threshold would be, four and a half metres or something, 4.5 metres long, and then probably another one between 4 and 4.5. But the length of the car, and for me, in many ways, the width of the car, should be grounds for financial penalty. You should definitely, there's no earthly way that someone parking a Mini, or someone even driving a Mini through the streets of a town that was designed for horses and carts, should be paying the same amount of money as someone driving a tank. It's actually absurd. There's almost no other area of taxation or duty where you would pay the same regardless of how much you were doing, how big your impact was. So, yes, that is a genuine question. And unless you're going to do, unless you can do a better job than I can, I don't think we can pretend this is not a motoring topic, can we? If you're wondering why I'm going on about that, historically, motoring topics are the dullest thing you can do on a radio phone-in. Bar none. They are absolute, I mean, the worst probably ever being parking tickets, smart motorways. You name it. If it's motoring, loads of people ring in. None of them have got anything remotely interesting to say. ULEZ. Oh, Lord. Was there ever a bigger nothing burger than ULEZ? Everybody convinced. They even lost a by-election because everybody thought that they were going to be hit by it when they weren't. And then suddenly it came in and nobody even flipping noticed. The other question is the blast from the past bit, in a way. And I've done it with tattoos. I used to get very exercised about tattoos when I first started in this job, and I've now come so full circle on that that by this time next year I intend to have one. I just haven't decided where yet. I know what. I just haven't decided where. Should we do a text vote? No. And I have changed my mind, as you know, about obesity. That was probably the biggest. I was probably at my most obnoxious when I was being, quotes, funny, end quotes, about people with obesity and mocking them and making fun of them. You know, like that you think of a newspaper columnist or an old school radio phone-in host, that we've always got something in our pocket that we think it's okay to abuse. And I realised, because we're doing it tongue-in-cheek and we don't really mean it, and I realised during therapy, actually, that there shouldn't be anybody that you feel okay to abuse for things over which they have no control. I think the real kicker point for me was probably when someone asked if I'd take the mickey out of people with eating disorders that left them very thin. So why do you do it with people whose eating disorders have left them very fat? And I didn't have an answer to that. And there was a caller who asked me how I would feel about arriving at A&E with one of my children to be greeted by a nurse covered in tattoos, because that was the caller, and she had got the highest marks in her cohort when she graduated from nursing college. So what would you want? The brilliant nurse with lots of tattoos or the less good nurse with no tattoos? On it goes. So I have developed, over the course of our time together, I have developed an ability to admit that I'm wrong. And when I am wrong, to climb down. Most obviously with obesity, but also with tattoos and with half a dozen other things that all feature in a book I wrote a few years ago called How Not to Be Wrong. I don't think I'm going to do it with these cars today. They didn't get into the book, but I'm not alone, am I? I mean, it's such a weird position to be in. And I've not got any beef with you personally. If I did, I think my neighbours have got one. But I just hate them. I hate them. I don't even drive much, but I hate them because they make everything worse. And anything that any council can do to... Also, if you're driving around in one of these ridiculous vehicles, aren't you showing off anyway? So you can now add to the things you're showing off about the fact that you can afford to pay more for parking. You see, look at you big high roller. Woo! I like this. I think it is the first time and Haringey are planning similar. No, Haringey have done it. What's that like? Residents with vehicles that are 4.5 metres or longer pay the highest parking charges in Haringey. Go Haringey! Bristol and Oxford councils are also proposing plans to increase parking charges based on this vehicle size. Go Bristol, go Oxford. And Cardiff, the way it gets written up in the Daily Telegraph, the latest crackdown on motorists by a Labour council. It's not a crackdown on motorists, because motorists in cars that aren't obnoxious won't be affected by it. It is a crackdown on people driving, not obnoxious people, it's a crackdown on people driving obnoxious vehicles. And I am here for it. Are you? 0345 6060 973. And listen, Be lighthearted if you want, but on a serious note, why are you? Why do you actually think this is important and necessary? 03456060973. And also, let's just have a little bit, as I say, because post-therapy, I can't do the sort of performative obnoxiousness anymore. It just doesn't sit right with me and it doesn't feel authentic. So I don't hate you if you drive one of these cars, and I'm not going to pretend to hate you. I completely understand why you do it. But can we at least all agree that they are profoundly obnoxious vehicles? And that the streets, the roads, our lives were far more pleasant before they became a constant feature. So that's what I want you to do. I just want you to either agree or disagree with me that they're just wrong. You've got the detail of the policy, 03456060973, and the question of whether or not I need to abandon my innate opposition to the vehicle, not the driver. It's boring, right? If I was pretending to hate you, the driver, you'd ring me immediately for a row. Or you'd be telling me that you have to transport your daughter's cello in the back of the car, and that if you couldn't do that, then she'd have to play the recorder. Or you'd really go for me with a conversation about your own mobility or your inability to get around and why you need a vehicle that size. All of which would be exceptions that prove the rule. None of them would actually make the vehicles any less obnoxious. But why wouldn't you pay more? Why shouldn't you pay more to park a bigger car? I used to think it was a little bit... I used to wonder about men with very long hair going to the hairdressers and whether or not they should pay more like a woman's price than a man's price. I don't know why that just popped into my head. Because the idea that you pay the same to park something huge compared to pay... Anyway, you get the topic. Fill it in now. I don't think, and I'm going to go through them now, I don't think I've had one really funny... Obviously, you think it's funny because you've sent it in. The driver should be barred. That's not bad, is it? But is it actually any better than, is this a bad driver I see before me? So we've got that going on, quite a lot of this. I'll have a look at these because I enjoy a little bit of Shakespeare. And then the question about obnoxious cars. The boring question about parking prices, which won't be boring at all because you're going to make a brilliant contribution. And the slightly less boring question about whether or not it's right to have. Is my hatred of these vehicles rational or irrational? There you go. We got there in the end. Is my hatred of these vehicles rational or irrational? Your thoughts after this.
This is LBC.
Can your phone drown out irritating noises in your videos? Can anybody hear me over this? Luckily, Audio Eraser on the Galaxy S25 Ultra gets rid of background noises in seconds. Can your phone do that? Galaxy can. Get 15% off Galaxy S25 Ultra with code S15.
Buy from Samsung.com by the 21st of October 2025. Use code at checkout. Voucher code can't be combined with any other offer. Samsung account login and network connection required.
Ever wondered what power is? Power is transforming the sun into your own energy source. Power is getting energy companies to pay you. Power is enjoying your morning coffee, knowing you created the energy to make it. Well, you and the colossal ball of fire in the sky. Because with solar panels from Hive, the sun works for you. Hive, know your power. May not cover all electricity usage, roof and weather dependent. Paid for surplus requires eligible SDG tariff.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froppies, Duck Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadapilla, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood, and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 03456060973.
I'm going to give a special mention to David because not only is this rubbish, but it's also nothing to do with Shakespeare, is it? It's from up Pompeii or one of the Carry On films. I've got an image of Frankie Howard. So infamy, infamy. They've all got it infamy. So someone backed one of those obnoxious 4x4s into William Shakespeare's daughter's old house in Stratford at the weekend. And I think there must be a brilliant headline for this, but I couldn't think of it myself for love nor money. The Daily Mail went with, "Is this a bad driver I see before me?" Which is really poor. David has gone for... This is awful. David's gone for, infamy, infamy, you just drove into me. I mean, it rhymes. I don't dislike it, but I'm pretty sure the infamy line is Frankie Howard, not William Shakespeare. There are some quite good ones, actually. In fact, it's one of those little competitions that has it's a bit too good. Too many people are entered. I'm not going to be able to keep track of them. You can't have this, Mark, because it wasn't an Alfa Romeo, as far as we know. But Mark went for, oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore Alfa Romeo. That's not bad, but it wouldn't work as a headline. Anyway, at least we can all agree the cars are obnoxious, can't we, Mike, in Caterham?
Yeah, morning, James. I think I would have gone for to reverse or not to reverse for a quote. But
it doesn't work, though, because it's got to sound like B, doesn't it?
I don't know, anybody. Getting back onto the monster cars, it's one of my pet hates. It's unbelievable that the size of vehicles on the roads. I mean, it's quite amusing watching people trying to park them in supermarket car parks and bays, yes. I must admit. But the thing that annoys me is that some of the roads are so narrow and these monster things come towards you and they come across the centre white line, forcing you off the road.
I'm usually on a bicycle, so it can be even worse there. You can hear it behind you, and you're cycling along perfectly normally, and you can hear it behind you. Even a bus manages sometimes to negotiate cyclists better than some of the people in these cars. What happened? So I hope I wasn't boring 20 years ago when I used to wang on about this all the time. But between you and me, Michael, I have a terrible feeling that I might have been a little bit boring. Why did people like us lose this battle so completely?
I don't know. Talking about, I'm a cyclist myself, and the only good thing about the big cars is it keeps the speed limit down because the people are so unable to judge the size of them. They sit behind the cyclist. I've got my road, which has got plenty of room to get a normal car past you, and they sit there following you for hundreds of yards because they're too frightened to try and go past.
No, that's very true. So, I mean, sort of comedy aside or anger aside, in a just universe, is there any meaningful argument? And I want you to set aside your biases and your bigotries, Mike. Is there any meaningful argument against having to pay more to park or drive something that's twice the size of something else?
I think they should. I was saying to a researcher, I think it might be Beckenham or Bromley Borough. I went to park over there, and the car parking charges vary on the emissions that your car gives out.
Okay.
So you emit more, you pay more for a parking space.
And therefore, this should be the same with size. You're taking up more space, therefore you pay more money. I like it. Thank you. 23 minutes after 12. Why has the battle been so comprehensively lost? If you were once on my side, me and Mike, lonely battle against these hideous vehicles. Why has it been so comprehensively lost? This is quite good. What car through yonder window breaks? That's brilliant, because what Toby's done, he's spelt brakes, as in cars. Obviously, in the original, like what light through yonder window breaks would be B-R-E-A-K-S. And Toby's gone for what car through yonder window breaks. That would have been a better headline, right, for the Daily Mail? So what have you got for that story about the person smashing their car into William Shakespeare's daughter's old house? I've gone with, is this a bad driver I see before me, boss? What about no one? What car through yonder window breaks? That's 10 times better. That's going to take some beating, actually. Well played, Toby. If there was a prize, you'd have won it. Steve's in Banbury. Steve, what would you like to say?
Danbury, don't get confused. I'm in Essex. Hi, James.
Danbury. Cars. Danbury, not Banbury.
Danbury, near Chelmsford. But anyway, I can't get the staff, mate.
It's not my fault. I'm blaming it on someone else. I can't get the staff. Carry on.
Don't worry. Listen, the cars today, when you go out and buy a car, they're huge. Even small cars are huge. Now, I am a car boy, but I'm...
Hang on a minute. Small cars can't be huge.
Yes, they can. A couple of weeks ago, Kersey Mill up in Suffolk, beautiful classic car meet. Lots of high-performance supercars, but what intrigued me were all the old cars that you and I used to get carried around in by our dads when we were young. And I can remember the Ford Granada, for example, being a massive car. It was like a ship. And they had some of these all restored up there, sat next to what are today common or garden cars.
Yeah.
And those Granadas are tiny comparison. You mentioned the
Mini. I know.
And so this idea of penalising people for having large cars is kind of, you can't, there isn't such a thing as a small car anymore. They're all large.
This is a bit like that episode of Father Ted where he had to explain why the cow was smaller when it was further away. You just line up 10 cars, Steve, right? Yeah. And you've got 10 different sized cars.
Yeah, I know what you're getting at. You're, so you're
talking
about,
I'm getting at. I'm getting at the most basic premise of mathematics or physics. And so that car there, right, that's really big. And if you want to call that car there less big, that's fine. I'm going to call it small. So the big car pays more than the less big car, or if we're sensible, the small car.
Let's take that thesis, and I like it, I understand it. But if you lined up a range of cars from the smallest modern car to sort of one of the largest, like those Land Rover Defender things or Range Rovers or whatever, and then you went back to the 1980s and 1970s and you found comparable cars. Yeah, so
This is ridiculous. This is, you've gone full motoring. This is why we don't do motoring phone. Why are you bringing 1970s Ford Granada into a conversation?
Because the infrastructure that the cars today are using is based upon, or has been.
There's no way a Ford Granada was 4.5 meters long.
Exactly. That's the point. Large cars in the past were smaller than large cars now. So if you're going to pay, if local authorities are going to pay, listen, bear me out.
I am.
If local authorities,
that's why I made that noise.
I know. Uh-huh. If they're going to charge more, if you've got a larger or a longer car, that's fair enough.
Oh,
but that's got to be used. That money has to be used to make the infrastructure more suitable for what are larger cars on average proportional today.
No, so you can't start widening roads. It's an absolute nightmare. They've done it near me. It was shut for about a year.
Not about roads. If you try and park in a multi-story car park with a car that you've purchased brand new over the last 10 years, you've got very, very little space. You know, there are some where they've given you sort of wide, big boy spaces, they call them. But of course, what that does, it diminishes the number of car parking spaces that are available. So the actual per car park space charge.
No, you've done it now. You've sent me to sleep. It's not your fault. It's the topic. I thought we might be able to steer clear of the usual sort of quagmire of dullness and MPG and what does the little lady drive. But it's all turned into the kind of radio that has four different coloured biros in its top shirt pocket.
Well, there's no shame in biros.
Stick that on a T-shirt. 28 minutes after 12 is the time. To break or not to break, that's not bad, but it's not up there with what car through yonder window breaks. This, I'm going to adapt this one from Phil slightly, because he's written Cry Havoc and Let Slip the Cars of 4x4. But what you could just go Cry Havoc and Let Slip the 4x4. That's really good. God, we've got two now that are much better than any of the professionals have come up with. Cry Havoc and Let Slip the 4x4. That's good, right? That's a good one. And then, what car through yonder window breaks? I like both of those. There's still room for more. And I'm sorry if you think you sent me a brilliant one and I've lost it. But that's just the way that my inbox works sometimes. Hang on. Dennis says he's making a good point. You must compare the modern Mini to a classic one. Yeah, cars have all got bigger. My mum had one of those little Minis that, looking back, you see them occasionally, don't you? They've usually got a coffee machine in the back of them and they're parked outside a sort of artisan pub. But they are absolutely minuscule. And we went on holiday in a Mini. My mum, my sister and me. So it wasn't four of us, but we went on a camping holiday. So she must have got the tent in the, what passes for the boot as well. I'm not suggesting everyone should be driving around in a sort of dinky toy. But if you are going to drive one of these enormous vehicles, then it seems to me perfectly reasonable that you pay a little bit more than people who are not driving an enormous vehicle. What is not to like? 0345 6060 973. Mike Hughes is here now with your headline.
Amazon says clients using its web services are starting to see their websites and apps come back online following a major outage. Users have been unable to access their accounts on Zoom and WhatsApp, while banks including Lloyds and Halifax have also been affected. Donald Trump insists the ceasefire in Gaza is still in effect, despite fire being exchanged by both sides. Israel says Hamas killed two soldiers near the city of Rafah at the weekend, with 36 Palestinians reportedly dying in retaliatory strikes. Thousands of Metropolitan Police staff are to strike on bonfire night. Almost 6,500 members of the PCS union, including call handlers and custody staff, will walk out in a row over pay. LBC weather, heavy showers across central and southern England and Wales, drier across Northern Ireland and much of Scotland, although heavy rain in the far northwest, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance,
or you'd rather make your escape, that you want to cut a dash or just cut your emissions, that you like to take the Benz or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwood's Audi Crawley and Five Oaks and Harwood's Volvo Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwood's, family owned since 1931.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name. Experts in money. A hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount. Promised a great return. Took all I had. And then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated. And every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money. So head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
CEL. Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
That's quite good. To beep or not to beep? That is the question. It's clever, but it's not as good as the other ones because it doesn't quite make sense, you know, does it? It's not as if you could have avoided a house by beeping. A house isn't going to get... I know about this stuff. A house isn't going to get out of the way just because you've tooted your horn or beeped. But the play on to be or not to be, this is from Joel, is very strong. But I still think that what car through yonder window breaks and... what was the other one I liked? Let slip the 4x4. They're both going to take quite a lot of beating, or indeed beeping. And then the booby prize all day long goes to David for infamy, you just drove into me. Which wasn't even Frankie Howard, I got that wrong as well. It's a Kenneth Williams line from Carry On Cleo. But it's definitely not Shakespeare. Of that I am 95% certain. Infamy, unless he was moonlighting as a Carry On writer. Or, of course, unless the Carry On quote was a callback to something that Shakespeare wrote, which I'd probably remember, I think. Oh, Parking is Such Sweet Sorrow. That's very good as well. God, that's amazing. Again, it's not quite going to go into the lead because they weren't actually parking. They were driving into a house, which is not... Anyway, 12:34 is the time. Would you need to be told if you heard a story about someone accidentally driving a car into William Shakespeare's Anne Hathaway's daughter's old house, William Shakespeare's old house, William Shakespeare's daughter's old house? Would you need someone to say, oh, it was an SUV, you know, it was a 4x4, you know? You wouldn't, would you? And what are the odds on it not being? What is the likelihood of it being, I don't know, a Toyota Yaris or something like that? Because without knowing any of the details at all, I'm going to confidently speculate that this was a problem caused by the size of the vehicle. And it has done damage to to one of the timbers, a corner of the entire house on Friday morning, already undergoing significant conservation works to preserve the unaltered building when it was struck. Hall's Croft, home to Susanna Shakespeare and her husband John Hall until 1616, when they inherited and moved into her dad's old house. It's been built in 1613. It was a little school until the 1800s, and now it's under mortal threat because someone in a 4x4 drove into it on Friday. You don't need me to tell you it was a 4x4. Why did we stop calling them 4x4s and start calling them SUVs? Should they, or should their drivers, pay more for the privilege of parking or driving around the place than the rest of us do? 0345 6060 973. Jack is in Stuttgart. Jackie, what would you like to say?
Well, I'd say to your producer, I would keep them out of towns or city centres altogether.
I like that.
It's less about the length. because all cars have got longer. We struggle to get a Seat Leon in the garage because the house is 40 years old.
Mm.
It's about the bulk and the height. They are so dangerous to pedestrians.
They really are.
Why do you need bull bars in the middle of Chelsea?
In case of bull escapes.
But I mean, here in Germany, you don't see them. Maybe the very new ones you do, but you have to have a green placard to take your car into the centre of cities here.
Really?
Or you pay an exorbitant fine if you're caught without one.
What does the green placard denote?
It's the emissions.
Okay, so you've got that. Well, that we've got the congestion zone, and we've got you, Les. So we're kind of getting that right.
Yeah, but it's overall. In every big city, you don't see massive gas guzzlers.
They can be electric now. So you can't
That's the exception. Is that you can get electric ones or hybrid, so they might get the green placard. But I don't see why they're necessary unless you have a legitimate reason to have one. It's like my aunt lived in the Cotswolds, so you see a lot of older Land Rovers.
No, that's fine. And also people who need to put a wheelchair in the back or something really big. I'm absolutely...
If you have a reasonable exception, but we have a Dodge Ram thing at work because we need to get onto site to do maintenance and things. But it's never taken around town. You can't.
What about other countries? I'm leaving America out of it. I didn't think of doing this as what I always think of as the school dinners principle, when we actually try and find out what's going on in other countries to get an idea of how nuts or normal our own activities are. Why would they not have caught on in Germany?
Well, the thing is, they have. You see them outside of cities. You see that, especially these big American ones. And it's just appalling.
Why have we let them kind of clutter up our towns and cities so completely?
Mm. Yeah.
And in other countries, they've actually got the wisdom to say, no, you can drive around the countryside in that if you want, but you can't. That'd be ridiculous. You can't drive it into central Stuttgart. That would be ridiculous.
Well, no, you can't. You literally can't.
That's how funny. How funny. Yeah. Do you genuinely find them obnoxious? Or
I do. Yeah. I look at them and I just... As I say, I see the one at work, and when I stand next to it, the bonnet is almost up at my shoulder height. And I think if that, something like that hit a child or...
But you don't need... The problem is you're almost encouraging people to have two cars where one would do, aren't you? So
no,
if you want to go into town...
I just don't see the
you get public transport going into town.
Yeah, I mean, if you've any sense, you take a public transport into the centre of any town, I think, because parking's so expensive anyway. But I don't see why they should be in towns. I really don't.
What's the appeal?
I have no idea.
I kind of do. I think, like, being up high and seeing the whole world in front of you is a way in which you can reassure yourself that your safety is being enhanced and improved, as long as you don't think too deeply about what you're doing to everybody else's safety, most obviously, I think, pedestrians, or indeed smaller cars. It's very hard to muster up much sympathy for cyclists in Brexit Britain. I don't think we can blame that on Brexit. It always was. But, it's by far the most environmentally friendly way to commute or to travel. It is. Thank you, Jackie. Coming up to 20 to 1. Is there a reason why the Brits would have embraced this more enthusiastically than other countries? If Jackie's anecdote stands up to further scrutiny, leaving America out of it, because... petrol is so cheap there that you can do whatever you want. I wonder whether there's a peculiarly British explanation for the popularity of these things. I've got a missing word round for you. Robert in East Grinstead's up next. I quite like this. You probably guess it. You will if you've seen the story, even if you haven't seen the headline. Penguin bars now can't be classed as what? Penguin bars now can't be classed as... As what? And it's one of those stories which at first you go, how chucklesome. And then you read into it a bit and you think, actually, that's a bit grim. The penguin bars can no longer be classed as what? It's coming up to 20 to 1. Robert's in East Grinstead. Robert, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James. Hello. Hi. I can see you being converted to one of these big cars and driving off in one.
Do you know why that won't happen? Because I really care about other people.
Okay.
It's my curse. It's my curse, Robert. I care more about other people than I care about myself. My generosity of spirit is unbounded.
Okay, all right. Well, I would say, look, caring about people, the reason that these diesel and petrol cars, quality big cars, survive, is, I think, we build some of the smallest houses places in Europe, and if you're living in a flat in the East End of London, and you're lucky enough to have a garage underneath it, you might find absolute pure joy in just sort of getting out of your cramped flat, slipping into a big, reliable car, and you've got wheels on it that can cope with all the potholes and the state of the roads. And as you break free of the city and you reach 30 miles an hour where your skin is being ripped from your flesh, it's so fast, 30 miles an hour, and you know that you can go somewhere like north of Aberdeen and not have to worry about an electric...
I like your lyricism. I mean, the problem is partly that this applies to electric cars as well. It's volume is the problem. It's a separate mode of duty and tariff and payment for emissions and for environmentally linked things. This is purely about size. So you could have an electric massive car and you'd still get hit with this sign. But I think I could have sat here... Now, hang on, I'm just thinking... The idea, why are these cars, because I'd only introduce that part of the question a little bit later in the programme. The reason why these cars are so popular in Britain is because so many people live in tiny homes.
Well, I think there's a big, it's not just that.
I love it.
If you think about it, we are being taxed to death. We've got speed cameras everywhere. We've got all sorts of ailments getting at us. A car is a personal space.
Yeah.
You know, you are literally, you can turn up the music as loud as you want, play whatever you want.
You can do that in any car, mate.
But you can't do it, well, don't spoil it.
Go from the flat. Go. I like the flat argument.
Well, you know, the thing is, you're in a cramped flat, you could be bringing up kids or whatever, and you've got something reliable.
Yeah, well, so rather than buy a bigger flat, you're going to spend 50 grand on an enormous car. I mean, it's a view. It's a thought. Thank you. In Japan, Joel tells us, sometimes I get halfway through a topic, or on this occasion, nearly at the end of it, and I realise that we should probably have introduced the international comparisons earlier. We don't. It's a national malaise. It's not just me, is it? We never spend any time at all imagining what they do in other countries. Probably why Brexit happened. In that we just don't think any other country matters. And on this, if it turns out that we do have a particular propensity for these vehicles in a way that other European countries don't, then I would really like to know why. Proximity to the United States? When they sneeze, we catch a cold? You can't really say that about the French. I don't remember, it's a while since I was in Paris, but I genuinely don't remember the streets of Paris being absolutely chock-a-block with these obnoxious vehicles. I could be wrong, but if it is a peculiarly British thing, we should have asked that question a little sooner. Because Joel tells us that in Japan, they have a whole category of cars called, forgive my pronunciation, key cars or K cars, that benefit from cheaper insurance, tax and parking costs, but they must be less than 3.4 metres long and 1.5 metres wide. And they have a relatively small engine as well. I like that. I think that's a really good idea. If you must use a car in London, and I fully appreciate that lots of people want to and some people have to, then properly reflect and recognise the fact that some cars have a much bigger impact, whether it's environmental or physical, on the rest of the population than other cars do. It's coming out to 12:45. I want to find out a little bit more about the latest scandal engulfing Nigel Farage's outfit. Is it Reform UK Limited, or do you still have to say Limited? I'm never quite sure. The Kent Council that was supposed to be the gold standard, we were told to watch Kent, because that is how we will govern the country. So we thought we'd have a little look at Kent after this.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Almost 6,500 Met police staff, including 999 call handlers, are due to walk out on Bonfire Night. How dangerous is this?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Summer sorted. Book a Jet2 holiday now and take your pick of our best rooms, flights and hotels.
You'll get 22 kilograms of baggage included. And right now, there's £120 off per couple with MyJet 2. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person and lock in the price for next summer. Jet 2 Holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Up to national protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A Southern Train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:47. It's not, I mean, it's the problem. Do you know one of the main problems with Donald Trump is that, I mean, how long have you got? But it is, we're talking now about deaths, breaches of ceasefire. I think up to 44 people in Gaza killed by Israeli airstrikes. Two Israeli soldiers killed by Hamas. I don't know whether any of the 44 people killed in retaliation were members of Hamas or not. Seems highly unlikely that they all would be. And Donald Trump, I suppose technically correct, is he, to claim that the ceasefire isn't over, that the ceasefire is still in place? The problem is that he could turn into, do you remember Comical Ali during the second Gulf War? Do you remember that? This is one for the younger listeners. That there was a guy who was sort of like the propaganda chief for Saddam Hussein during the second Gulf War, second Iraq War. And he would routinely find himself standing in front of like really bad stuff. So things would be blowing up in the background and planes would be swooping down and dropping bombs on Iraqi positions. And this guy would be standing in front of the camera going, everything is fine. Everything is fantastic. Everything is under... And it's not funny because people die in these circumstances. But it's a genuine question. What would it take for Donald Trump to admit that, quotes, his, end quotes, peace deal had failed? Because I think you know the answer to that question. Or at least I'm pretty sure you know what I'm thinking. The answer is nothing. I cannot imagine any circumstances in which Donald Trump would admit that his own... Well, I can, actually, if it gave him an opportunity to attack somebody that he wanted to attack. But generally speaking, you could imagine, couldn't you, a return to almost full hostilities from Israel into Gaza. A return to the campaign widely judged to be genocide. It could go back to what it was like a month ago, and Donald Trump... You could conceivably imagine him claiming to a camera or claiming to assembled media that everything was still going fine and that the ceasefire hadn't been breached at all. And that's not funny. That's what I mean when I talk to you about the importance of the assault upon truth, the assault upon facts. Going right back to Kellyanne Conway, describing lies as alternative facts and Trump describing real news as fake news. But now you're in a place where you can actually imagine him describing a complete collapse in this ceasefire that everybody wants to succeed and claiming that everything was going swimmingly. It's a weird one. 10 minutes to 1 is the time. Steve speaks for many of you when he writes, I've just turned on James and he's talking about cars. I think I've died and gone to heaven. I knew he'd finally crack. Every now and then, Steve, we have a motoring-based phone-in that serves, really, just to remind me why we never have motoring-based phone-ins. Natasha Clark is with us because that story in our bulletins, which I think comes from an exclusive in The Guardian, I'm going. Do you know what would be the worst thing I could do to you now? Do you know what would be really unfair?
I'm waiting.
I'm building up tension.
Go on.
So we're about to hear about why four councillors have just been suspended by Reform UK in Kent.
Mm-hmm.
If I used that as a springboard from which to ask you, how many councillors have they now lost since May?
At least four, right? Go on, tell me. Is it more?
Right, I'm not telling you. I'm building up tension. I'll tell you later. Tell me about the latest four.
So the late... Well, sorry, of course it's four. Plus, I thought it was another four that was...
We should bring us up to eight recently.
So that will bring us up to eight.
Mm.
So, James, the Liberal Democrats are describing this story, which you're talking about now, as a real-life episode of The Traitors. They've today suspended the whip from four more Kent councillors. It comes, as you say, after The Guardian has got this leaked video of a very fracturous meeting at Kent County Council. The councillors can be heard complaining about backbiting being ignored by their leader, Lyndon Kemkeran, who tells them that they will be screwed and that Reform can forget about winning the next general election if they don't balance the budget. She shouts that she will be muting some of them. Another says there has been infighting at the heart of their council and this isn't look good. She tells the group that the world is watching and that Nigel Farage himself is personally watching what happens in this council. So let's dive in right here and get to the heart of this. Here was where the Reform Council leader I was talking about, Lyndon, told one of them to suck it up.
It's then my job as leader to appoint the cabinet, which I've done. And the way the constitution works, it is the leader and the cabinet who make the big decisions. Now, because I'm not a dictator or an autocrat, I like feedback. I like to discuss. I like to hear what everybody thinks. However, when it comes to making the really big decisions, and I'm afraid LGR is one of those really big decisions, sometimes I will make a decision that might not be liked by everybody in the group. But I'm afraid you're just going to have to fuck it up, okay? Because I am the democratically elected leader.
So it's all gone a bit... What was her name? Jackie... What was
it's all gone a bit Jackie Weaver.
Jackie Weaver, hasn't it?
I do remember that.
It
feels like a lifetime ago.
So just to be clear, they're all arguing with each other. These aren't arguments with other political parties.
No, they're all arguing with each other, at least according to this footage which has been obtained by The Guardian. Do you want to hear a bit more of the infighting?
Well,
this is the best bit. You've got to say yes.
Okay.
Okay, go on.
Quite frankly, the question is that the right leader and the right cabinet? Because we, as backbenchers, need to understand what we're getting behind.
I'm not asking...
There physically isn't time at this stage. So
I'm
what we've done...
I'm asking you to run through everything. I'm just asking
well,
you...
Well, you are. That's exactly what you're asking me to do.
I don't know whether or not you're intentionally... sort of picking things up. Or the problem is, it's easier when it's face to face.
Of course, it's easier when it's face to face.
Right.
I'm going to be on bloody holiday this week, Paul.
Okay.
I don't want to be having this meeting.
Right. What the proposal is that you're putting forward? That's all I'm asking for.
And my reply to that is,
we'll be briefed as it goes. Yes.
Paul, yeah? I'm going to mute you in a minute. Let me reply. We're running out of time.
It's all right, Brian. You keep laughing your head off me.
In the committee meeting. Paul, I'm
going to
mute you so I can just speak.
Let's face it, the situation at the moment regards our group is not great. You know, I've worked my off in my own portfolio and I'm still getting a rod up my backside all the time. And, you know, and as what Bob has already stated, that there is a lot of backbiting going on and that tends to be coming from the top down.
You just heard there from Councillor Paul Thomas and then from Councillor Dean Burns. Now, a spokesperson for Reformers told me this morning that Paul Thomas, Oliver Bradshaw, Bill Barrett and Maxine Fothergill are suspended pending investigation following evidence that they brought the party into disrepute. So what I can conclude from that is because they believe that it is them that has leaked this recording.
One of them. Is they're not brought into disrepute for the potty mouth because
no,
the leader of the council was the most potty mouthed of them all.
No, she's still in position. And it does seem to be a classic case of Reform infighting. And as you'd expect, opposition parties totally jumping on this today. The Lib Dems say Reform's meeting starting to sound more like an episode of The Traitors than the running of a major council. All that's missing is for Claudia Winkleman to appear and ask them who they're going to banish next. Reform don't know what they're doing. And Labour say that Reform's leader in Kent said that the Reform councils were the biggest advert for what a Nigel Farage government would look like. Well, now we know what that means. Complete chaos.
Well, not just Kent, of course, being the biggest advert. They're also reported to have exceeded the £90,000 threshold for ticket sales at their Birmingham conference. So they're being investigated over the possible underpaying of VAT. Who wouldn't trust them with the entire economy? And speaking of economies, Kent Council's budget is just over £2.6 billion, excluding schools. And these people are essentially in charge of that.
Yeah. And, you know, what they were talking about just then, about its plans for local government reform, which basically would mean abolishing Kent County Council and some other local authorities and bringing it into a wider authority. That was what they were discussing there. It also faces huge challenges in terms of balancing its budget. And obviously, that's not Reform's fault. They've inherited that. That's obviously come from the previous administration. But
they promised to cut it, didn't they?
They promised to cut all this money. They've obviously are not going to want to hike council tax. And you heard the leader just then basically saying that if we can avoid hiking council tax by 5%, they clearly have a huge deficit to try and fill. The Guardian newspaper also talks about a culture of abuse and bullying causing deep splits in this Reform group. Now, the Guardian has also been told there have been around 8 official complaints to the South East regional director in the last 3 months about them. So they have, well, they did have 56 councillors. How many are we on now then?
Kent?
Yes.
52. Well, no, I wasn't just talking about Kent. Did you think I was just talking about Kent?
No, I did, yeah.
I was talking about everywhere.
Oh, God, I don't know.
Since May. Also, on that question...
Should we start getting a tally together?
Yes, we should. I think Mark Pack has already done it, the Liberal Democrat peer and pollster. But the bit here was the one who came out and said that we've had a look now and there isn't any money to be saved. The cabinet member for adult social care described the council as already being down to the bare bones after they got in. We've got more demand than ever before and it's growing, she told the Financial Times. We just want more money. Revealing that she expected the local authority to raise council tax by 5%, the maximum permitted, despite having been elected on a promise not to raise council tax by 5%, the maximum permitted. So go on then. Since May, this is Mark Pack, Lord Pack to you and me, as of this morning, with the 4 latest suspensions, the tally of councillors that the Reform has actually lost, so they've either been suspended and then gone, or they've gone, or they're currently suspended but might not go, which would include, I think, the 4 we've been talking about. What figure would you have a little ballpark guess on how many councillors they've lost since May?
Can I, maybe 20?
Not bad. Sheila, do you want to have a go?
Say that again. How many
councillors have Reform lost since May, since they got into May?
And they had, what, about 1,000 elected in May? 1,200?
Something like that.
120.
So it's somewhere between the two of you. Correct answer is 31.
Oh, okay.
31.
I was closer. I think I should win that.
You would do, actually. Yeah, so you've got and various allegations and investigations unfolding as well. So I'm sure we can all agree that these are precisely the kind of people who should be running the country.
But that's exactly what Labour want to highlight, right? From now until the next election, this is what Reform would look like if you gave Nigel Farage the keys to Downing Street. And that's exactly the argument they will be making over the next few years. And of course, it's going to be really difficult for the Reform Party, for Nigel Farage, for Richard Tice to be able to go on and say, we're going to make billions and billions of pounds worth of savings in government. Well, if they can't do it in local government, how are they going to be able to do that in national government?
Yeah, but in their defence, I mean, if you were to do it, as you pointed out, in percentage terms, as a percentage of the overall total, that this is absolutely nothing compared to the number of MPs that they've actually lost out of the total that got elected at the last general election.
So we've lost at least James McMurdoch.
He's the one that did time for beating up a British woman.
Who else have we lost?
The guy that wants to deport people who are here legally.
He could
defect to the Tories at this rate.
Least. And then we gained one in Sarah Poachin, right, didn't we?
So are we
still on 4 again?
Still on 4.
It's really hard to keep.
But they lost 20% of the original 4. Anyway, I digress. At least we can all agree they're just the sort of people you want running the country. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, and pause and rewind live radio. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, Asma Mir will be in for Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. The Israeli Premier League derby between Maccabi Tel Aviv and Hapoel Tel Aviv was cancelled, as you know, after what police described as public disorder and violent riots. Does this lead you to think Keir Starmer should accept he was wrong about the Villa decision about Maccabi Tel Aviv? Was he wrong that it was wrong? We'll talk about that at three. At two, is the palace still putting Prince Andrew's feelings about titles over the good of the country? And I don't know about you, I'm going to talk about Bonfire Night at 1 o'clock and the policing of it, because when I was a kid, it was a big deal, Bonfire Night, in terms of both safety, your safety, and policing and security. Well, this Bonfire Night, over 6,000 Met police staff, including 999 call handlers, are due to go on strike. Just how dangerous does that sound?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, a major internet outage affecting some of the world's largest websites, games and apps appears to be starting to recover. More than 500 clients of Amazon Web Services, including Zoom, WhatsApp and banks such as Lloyds and Halifax, saw their connections disrupted this morning. The tech journalist Chris Stockel-Walker says there's been a huge ripple effect.
Companies are so large and have such a big share of the market, it does have this cascading impact where one system goes down, then another, and then suddenly half the internet is gone.
Donald Trump has insisted the US-brokered ceasefire between Hamas and Israel is continuing to hold despite fire being exchanged by both sides. The IDF says two of its soldiers were killed at the weekend, while 45 Palestinians reportedly died in retaliatory strikes. The US president's special envoy and his son-in-law are among a delegation who've arrived in Israel today. During CBS's 60 Minutes program, Jared Kushner discussed the president's frustration with the peace process.
The Israelis were getting a little bit out of control in what they were doing, and that it was time to be very strong and stop them from doing things that he felt were not in their long-term interests.
In the last hour, the king has visited the scene of the Manchester synagogue attack. Two worshippers were killed in Crumpsall 2.5 weeks ago on Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar. Thousands of civilian staff at the Metropolitan Police are to strike on Bonfire Night in a row over pay. The PCS union says the walkout will include 999 call handlers, detention officers and police community support officers. The Met says it's made a reasonable offer to settle the dispute and remains open to finding a solution. Four Reform UK members of Kent County Council have had the whip suspended after a leaked video showed a tense online meeting. The footage obtained by The Guardian included council leader Lyndon Camcaran swearing at one of the party's representatives. The quartet are being investigated for bringing the party into disrepute. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 36 points at 93.91. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, heavy showers across central and southern England and Wales, drier across Northern Ireland and much of Scotland, although heavy rain will persist in the far northwest. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Mike Hughes.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I've been reading up on my royal rules and regulations, such as they are. We're going to be talking at two, and after two, with Emily Maitlis about the Prince Andrew story again. Not least because there's this sort of residual... not in every quarter, but there's residual antipathy to the fact that Prince Andrew hasn't lost titles. He's just decided to desist from using them. And there's one left that he is using, which is Prince Andrew, because he's the son of a monarch, the late Queen Elizabeth II. And we've been going through what rules exist for how that particular title could indeed be removed. We'll talk through that after two, and we'll hear from Emily again on the revelations since she and I spoke last week about that email that emerged last weekend. This weekend has been altogether, well, as interesting and more interesting because of the detail coming out in Virginia Giuffre's book, her posthumous memoir. So we'll talk about that after two, and your thoughts on it very welcome. But I want to start with Bonfire Night. Not far away, is it? A week or so, 10 days? When I was a kid, Bonfire Night, I loved it for a start. Still love fireworks, one of my favourite things. But Bonfire Night, when I remember it as a child, it was always surrounded by warnings. Warnings at school, warnings on the television, on the radio, in newspapers about safety. And it was very much an evening that was about fun. But the job of the emergency services and hospitals was always featured large in our lives. It was clearly a big focus then. And I wonder whether people are aware just how tricky to police and to serve in terms of emergency services Bonfire Night can be. All the more reason to talk about it, because this time, unless there's a resolution between now and then, this year, almost 6,500 Met police staff, including 999 call handlers, counter-terror police and forensics teams, are due to walk out on Bonfire Night in a dispute over pay. Joseph Draper is here to give us the detail of the story, and we'll hear from a former Met police call handler in a moment, Issy Vine. But this is about pay, this dispute, Joseph.
Yeah, it's about the London allowance. So police officers at the Met were given a London allowance. Now the civilian staff want that same payment. And as a result, it's going to be a really difficult night for the police on Bonfire Night. As you say, it's an incredibly busy time of year. We know theft, antisocial behaviour, crime skyrockets on Bonfire Night. Previously, burglaries have risen by 100%.
Is that because burglars just see people leaving their house?
Yeah, exactly. People are out at events. But you also have, you know, antisocial behaviour, improper use of fireworks. We've heard from the London Fire Brigade today that they're already dealing with call-outs, more call-outs than usual.
Related to fireworks.
Exactly. So this is already starting. It's one of the busiest times of year. There is the potential this year for London to have not enough police officers on the street, because the Met's going to have to pull thousands of them off the front line just to fill these roles. We think up to 6,500 of them, and they're roles that the police can't do without. We're talking 999 call handlers, custody suite staff, even intelligence, forensics, counter-terrorism as well. Incredibly important roles. And we're told, Sheila, it's likely to cost the force thousands of pounds in taxpayers' money just to fill those roles, cancelling leave, paying overtime to officers. The strike's being organised by the Public and Commercial Services Union. That's the same union that called for the Border Force strikes last week. They say after the Met Police rejected their request for that same London allowance. And as for people at home, Sheila, perhaps worried about their safety on Bonfire Night, the union group president, David Parrocks, told them to take their concerns to the Met's commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley.
He is the one who has chosen to shortchange police staff at a time when they can't afford to be shortchanged. Our members have got no choice. We've got members using food banks. They can't afford to not receive that £1,250. The impact is likely to be that there will be far fewer police officers available across the Met because they will have to backfill all of those roles, many of which are obviously critical roles.
But the reality is this is going to have a huge impact on police's ability to protect people from crime on Bonfire Night.
All of those issues that our members usually protect the public from, which indicates how important our members are, which is why it's madness that they're not receiving this payment and are thus struggling to make ends meet.
Why is that extra money for your members more important than public safety on Bonfire Night?
Well, I don't